got my dice and I got my friends. We're going on a quiz that never ends. You know when there is trouble abound, me and my crew will always be around. Ladies and gentlemen, I am the Lone Gunman, and it's time for the Gamers Haven Podcast with your hosts, Ethan, Jeremy, and Nathan.
So now we pause for station identification?
Well, we're actually going to do our intro now.
Okay.
Yeah, and this could technically be us going into the intro because we're now chatting and whatnot. But hello and welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast. I am Ethan. I am, of course, here with my intrepid co-hosts, Nathan and Jeremy. Jeremy is joining us via Skype because of the nasty weather that is.
It's not Skype.
We have to say Skype because we can't talk about the proprietary technology we're using for satellite bouncing. But, yeah,
he's on voice over internet protocol.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. It doesn't sound. This didn't roll off the tongue.
I
was talking about bouncing it off of satellites. We're using military satellites, you know, to signal from a secret hidden base in the island somewhere that he's at. He's establishing our secondary base.
Or Jeremy is lost in the time stream again. He went into the refrigerator.
Oh.
It's fun. I like the time stream.
It's good. He likes to go fishing in the time stream.
Yeah. I like to jack with the time stream.
Yes, he likes to just throw things in the time stream and sees what happens.
If I disappear again, I'm going to be incredibly pissed off.
Well, you'll get over it.
And we are joined in studio with a guest this time, Mr. Chris Parent. Say hi.
Hi.
And for those of you who don't know, Chris Parent is a man of many talents, one of which being a game designer and chef. So,
yes, all of that, yes.
But we'll talk about more of that here in a bit. But just sort of like we like to do in the intro, the cursory, what have we all been up to in our games lately? I guess my thing is, as Jeremy can attest to, I've had a run on venting a lot of my creative energy into the superhero game, as I've been dumping things out onto the Facebook group for that. You've seen the 3,000 different documents that are up there now?
Yeah, you notice I haven't sent anything back yet?
Yeah, I noticed.
Yeah, because I can't send anything back because I keep getting stuff.
Well, I still do need a super villain name from you. I got one from Tracy and one from you. I haven't gotten one from Tracy and Robin. I haven't gotten one from you or Eric yet.
So. Yeah, I've got a couple of ideas.
Excellent. I wrote up Robin's characters.
Rot.
Rot, yes.
Yeah.
That should be fun. There's more to her than what I posted on there, obviously, but
should be interesting.
Yes. But basically what I've been doing is going through all my old notes and my old big binder of superhero stuff and figuring out basically the population of supervillains and superheroes that are in the universe and trying to make a master list of them. So like Spitfire is on there now, obviously, because he's a member of the Freedom League.
Horatio Hollenbach.
So is Wind Whistler. I think Becca is elsewhere right now.
Yeah.
Although, oddly enough, we started using minis in the superhero game because it actually is making like area effects and stuff like that.
It makes it a lot easier to use.
And Reaper actually has a line of chronoscope line. Actually, has some superheroes in there. They just added a female superhero archer, which I was like, hey, that would have been perfect for Wind Whistler right there. Yeah.
Mine's easy, generic superhero with cape that flies.
Yes. With a bit of modding and whatnot. Yeah. The other thing, you know, as far as CantCon stuff, is I got the master mold in for the Jabberglock mini and passed it off to the Secret Skeleton guys. It looks great. It's going to be very cool. They're getting it done in resin, so it should be pretty sweet. Because apparently metal miniature costs have gone up 70%.
Yeah. Pewter and silver something mix, which is usually what's used for a lot of the metal miniatures now, it's gone ridiculous. I mean, anything that's got silver in it right now has gone through the roof. I mean, it's kind of scary to think that 1963 a silver quarter bought you a gallon of gas.
Yeah.
2011, 1963 silver quarter will buy you more than a gallon of gas.
Wish I kept all those.
Yeah. So, just out of curiosity, what other miniatures have been made from resin?
Jeez, there's
Citadel Finecast.
What's that?
The Citadel Finecast miniatures
Are
made from a resin-based material.
Yeah. Okay, so plastic is kind of what...
Well, it's not different. Plastic. It's a bit more brittle, I'd say.
It's brittle. It's also easier to work with when it comes to sanding and removing edges and stuff.
Gotcha.
It is not designed.
It's cheaper, but I think it actually picks up detail real
It is not cheaper than using basic plastic. It's just easier to work with. It has a lower
cooking point. I was passing on what the Secret Skeleton guys were telling me. So.
Yeah, from what I understand,
also understand they're looking at it from a they don't produce the quantity that say Citadel does. They do very small orders.
Yeah,
some of the companies think that it's expensive as hell though.
Yeah,
they charge ridiculous amounts.
Resin usually resin is slightly more expensive than working with plastic, but it's a lot easier to work with, and as Ethan said, it picks up detail a lot better.
So real quick, Chris.
Yes.
I love the sound effect on your website.
Thank you.
So I'm going to load it again.
Jeremy is distracted by shiny things.
Meanwhile, I'm hearing Boris howling at the door.
Yeah, and I haven't been able to make it because of life, liberty, and everything, make it to a lot of games lately.
Our last game got canceled.
Yeah. Yeah, as of, we're recording this actually on Friday, April 27th, on Friday, April 26th, I wrote and turned in my last paper for college until I decide to go to law school someday when I'll be writing gobs and gobs of papers. But as of right now, I am done with college. I am graduating next week, and all that good stuff. It really hasn't sunk in for me yet.
Yeah, your commencement's on the 4th.
The 4th, 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. That's up at UMKC?
Yeah, up at UMKC.
Yeah, I plan on going. It just depends on whether my stomach works with me. Come on, stomach, work with me!
Money and gifts, I assume, are accepted.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, definitely.
I'll be there to give you a firm handshake and a congratulations, because I'm flat-assed.
For our listeners, those who don't know, I've been actually back in college since 2004, and I'm graduating next week with my third and fourth degrees. So I will have 4 degrees, and then hopefully, I will find some job that actually will pay me.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a job that pays me.
Yeah, do my best to find that.
It's okay.
Because
You know what's interesting, Jeremy?
There's lots of things that are interesting. You know what's really interesting? When I reload this page.
No, you have a pretty stable job, right?
Yeah.
Both Ethan and I don't.
Yeah.
That's just.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is just like, and you go.
Well, Chris is gainfully employed, too.
I am, and I'm trying to get you gainfully employed, Ethan.
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm trying to get myself gainfully employed anywhere who'll take me at this point. So.
Yeah. I'm at that point where I'm about ready to go back working at a previous company I worked for that I moved to a different company because the work there was literally
because
killing
me. Evil.
Yes. Yeah, so.
It's annoying. Job hunting. Yeah.
You can't find work. You gotta go with what you can get since they have work that I can do.
Somebody's meowing.
Yeah, that's Boris.
That would be Boris. Hi, Boris.
I'm going to throw something in the time stream. He's going to turn into a raptor.
Oh, what about you guys? Do you guys... I guess the other thing I managed to do is I guess spotted in Andre's superhero game for 3 weeks. That was fun. I got to play a character named Turnkey. That was fun and interesting. So people will have to listen to the City of Angels actual play at some point to hear that little arc. But that was entertaining. How about you guys? Have you guys been throwing some dice lately?
No, not at all. Actually,
gaming is for dorks.
No, it's just all of our games have been getting canceled. So yeah. it's like, well, I'm supposed to run a Hollow Earth Expedition game this weekend. It's canceled.
Oh man, I would have played that.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't. It was hard enough getting 4 people together to play it.
Oh, my problem is just time.
Yeah.
Not enough time to do it.
I enjoy the system. It's very, very easy.
Yes.
And it's great to run with because I can just throw anything crazy out there. And people are just like, oh, well, we got to deal with it. Because anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But that game got canceled because the player who I actually started running the game for, who really wanted a game, got a job. And, of course, they're like, well, you're working like from 10 a.m. till midnight every Saturday. So he wasn't able to.
Yeah.
make it so. And then before that, the weather looked like it was going to be really bad, so the Wizards College game got canceled, and then nothing happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, God, and that was the... Yeah, that was the week I was in. That was last... Was that last week?
That was 2 weeks ago.
Okay, yeah. That and oddly, I was up in Indianola for Beth's spring formal. And
you guys got hammered.
It. We stayed a little bed and breakfast out there in Des Moines, and we left at about 6 o'clock in, monsoon of rain. Had a great time at the party, came back, got back after midnight. And wind had been so bad that it had almost knocked it. It had basically ripped a tree in half in their front yard, and it had fallen. And I'm talking not a tiny tree; it was a big freaking thing. And it like fell just right, so it missed their mailbox and their front porch and everything. And the guy had been out there with his electric chainsaw and carved a path through so you could actually get to the door. But it was like night and day difference. It was like going through a jungle to get in. It was kind of cool.
Yeah,
but no, yeah, we got hit like hard there.
Nothing. Yeah. Absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. And Andre sent me a text, goes, yeah, judging from the way the weather looks, yeah, I'm going to call a game on basis of bad weather. And Becca says those ill-fated words that just cause it to happen. If nothing happens, I'm going to be mad.
Yeah.
Nothing happens. The instant you say that, it's like saying, well, what else could go wrong?
Nothing can possibly go wrong.
How hard can it be?
Yeah.
I did get a copy of Rook City for Sentinels of Multiverse.
Awesome.
Yes, very cool, very cool. And they have a new Kickstarter up, which I guess we can talk about that later.
Ooh, yay. But, we'll have a whole huge section about Kickstarter.
Lots perhaps of Kickstarter. We will, yes.
Have you been able to play any games?
Like I have actually been rekindling my love of the 4C system, the four-color system.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Because I, in a general trend of self-promotion, I will try not to be too self-promoting, but a friend of mine wanted me to write a role-playing game based off his collectible card game. And so I decided I would try to run it in the 4C system, and it works brilliantly. Though I'm making some tweaks to it. Especially because
it was the 4C system, the old face rip system.
Yes, okay. The old Marvel,
the old awesome Marvel system.
Exactly.
Okay, I have all of the Marvel RPG books except for like four of them. That's what I started gaming.
They are all online, pretty much.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah,
but I have to. I wanted to have the physical ones.
No, this I totally understand because they were not terribly advanced, but really quite a lot of fun. But you know, I've kind of been taking it and tweaking it a little bit because I want the game to be a little bit more gritty, so. But I love the simplicity of it. It's just
sweet.
Yeah, I tell somebody to do something. It's easy to know what to roll. It's easy to figure out if they want. And then go on.
Yes. Shift X, class 1000.
Yeah, you guys talk about the first role playing system that you guys played in. It sounds awesome. And it's like, what did you play with, Nathan? First role playing game system I actually played for more than like 5 seconds was TMNT and Other Strangeness.
I am doing the Fist of Rock right now because I honestly can't remember.
Yes, we are joined by someone who actually does like Palladium.
Yeah, oh yeah, you can check out Echoes from the Rifts.
We're not going to hold that against you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, I played Rifts for a long time. I actually enjoyed it, but then
Jeremy's Rifts book were good for absorbing cat pee.
Yeah, they protected his very much more expensive D&D books.
Yeah.
But I don't. No one liked it. And it was one of those things, it's like, it took 2 hours to make a character, and it could take 5 seconds for the character to die. And so it's just,
happened. Yeah.
It's just, no. And then I met Kevin Simbeta, and he was an absolute and utter smurf hole.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, okay.
He's terrible.
No, I will disagree with you. From a man who has his number on speed dial,
he was absolutely mean and rude to me. Yeah, I'm... They were like talking about the Rift game that was coming out for the Nokia phone that was the big thing at the time.
The
and
N-Gage,
he acted
to be just the N-Gage.
Yeah, the N-Gage, yeah. And he was just downright
the three games
nasty to me. And the thing is I look at that and I was like, okay, I mean I understand being busy.
Maybe
and stuff,
we hit him at a bad day. I don't know.
But see, the same happens. Thing can be said. Everybody says Gary Gygax was the same way.
Yeah.
And I met Gary Gygax, and he was the nicest guy I ever met. Which was weird. Him and Dave Arneson both are supposed to be that way, and both of them were just super nice.
Yeah, I never heard that about Gary, but I've heard everything about Kevin Simbeta from He's the greatest guy ever, too. He's the worst guy ever. And
he was just downright bad to me.
The truth of the matter is, he's a guy.
Yeah.
And everybody has good days and bad days. Yeah. I know that, but it's the thing is, his first impressions...
Yeah, absolutely.
They stick.
And I'm sure that, if he were to know that, he'd feel bad about it. But,
Well, the worst part of it was that I had no interest in an Engage phone, but the thing is still, if they made a Rift...
Engage wasn't a phone. It was just a handheld game.
Right.
Well, it actually was a phone as well.
It was a piece of shit.
It was
awful.
You better mark that. You just...
The syllables did not come out of the mouth.
It's all good. If they actually released a computer game based on the system, I would undoubtedly pick it up and play it. I mean, I like the setting. The Rift setting is cool.
Absolutely.
I cannot fault them for the setting. The problem is the rule system is very...
It is what it
insane.
Is.
Insane.
Oh.
I wasn't going to say anything. I'm not going to say insane. It's just it's got a lot of complexity
I'm not going to go a platinum apologist on you. I just think that you can't point it out as the worst system ever.
Oh, God, no.
I didn't. I've never said it's the worst system ever.
That was
Gate War.
Yeah.
Gate War.
Blue Planet
was good. It's just the book was like reading a biology textbook.
Gosh.
Palladium had very good rules for creating familiars.
Yeah, that is true. That was cool. Yes. You could go all out.
Palladium
rules were not for me. They're not the worst rules I've run into.
I mean, really, if I wanted a familiar for a magic user, it actually had the best rules.
I played Millennium's End, and I played first edition Conspiracy X. Those were messed up rules, let me tell you.
Well,
I mean, I was a pretty advanced player by the time I made it to that, and I had to reread the rule section in Conspiracy X about 12 times before it started to even barely make sense.
Yeah, but it could have been worse. I mean, it could have been like, what was it, Silver Age Sentinels, where you had to have the accounting program to...
No, that was Champions.
Champions.
Champions. Champions. Champions worked, it just had a lot of paperwork.
It just was slow on some things.
It's like, I throw a punch, and... Hang on, let me even put all the information.
Champions took way too many dice.
I miss.
So can you guess what I've been doing?
What have you been doing, Jeremy?
Since we haven't had really any chance to like roll any dice. So WoW is free up to level 20, right?
Oh, God.
But, Robin and I can't group into free. Because, if we're going to run around in WoW, we need to group. So we've been running around on WoW. I've got a level 40, so does she. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, 41.
He has fallen into shadow.
Again.
Actually, they've done a couple of things, which I have to say, they've surprised me.
I don't know. After Cataclysm, I was not interested in it.
It's just my overall distaste of online games.
Well, the one thing I like that they did is they've done this thing where you can be in the same area... But if you're on a different quest, the actual areas will change. Like,
yeah, it's called instanced areas.
Well, I don't know. I know it used to be really chunky. Now it's really sweet. Not to mention Robin and I were driving tanks.
Yeah, that's in the Worgen quest, isn't it?
No. But we were driving tanks and killing orcs with a machine gun. By the hundreds.
That sounds like the Worgen starting thing where the orcs come in on like an airship and stuff and you basically take them out with like a giant
catapult. They were all ground troops. And we even when we reached our number of 400, Robin and I didn't stop.
Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah.
This is like the world's longest intro for this show. So
we've got my Osric game coming up on Sunday.
That is true. That is true. And we got Wizards College coming up tomorrow. If everything holds up.
The weather is supposed to be pretty bad tomorrow morning, but it's supposed to clear up by the afternoon, so hopefully Andre will still be willing to come in.
Alrighty.
You have to understand, have to drive in from Lawrence. Yeah. It's like the weather tonight. It would not have been a good idea for Germany to drive in, especially with the tornado warning.
Yeah, but so far it's whatever.
Yeah, it pretty much is. That's the funny thing. It's like, the weather's going to be horrible.
It's this area of Kansas. Yeah. It's like either goes swings south or swings north of us.
But when it hits us,
it hurts, yeah.
I'm looking for four stats.
Apparently Chris can control the weather, so it's all good.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I'm looking for four stat systems, and I'm not like finding anything specifically.
Four stat systems.
Four color.
for color. That's what I.
It's free. Yeah, I think you can get it off of RPG Now, and it's free.
Yeah, it's free. Yep.
And it's just, do they label it as the 4-color system, yes, or just the 4C system?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's 4C.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's a free one, and it's the old Marvel system. It's
is. 4 color systems, core rules, Seraphim Guard.
Yep. It's RPG all OG Now. So,
well, we can't get to it. They're performing server maintenance right now.
Yeah, they're performing server maintenance.
Server maintenance. Anyway, we'll be back right after this.
I enjoy gaming because it provides a framework for collaboration on stories that are better than what any of the people sitting at the table could come up with on their own. My name is Zachary Johnson, and I'm the Gamerati.
Gamerati.com. It's good to be a gamer.
For entire generations of people now, gaming is as much a part of the fabric of their reality as television, films, books, music, and any other form of entertainment medium. Continue is a magazine for the gaming community, the global gaming community. Not just video and computer games, but board games, card games, role-playing games, alternate reality games, and anything that falls into the category of humans engaging to have fun. A celebration of gaming. Everything we love about this mad entertainment sector. Continue Magazine at www.continuemag.com.
We are back. And as we said in our longest intro ever, we are here with our in-studio guest, Chris Perrin, to talk lots of stuff, but mainly talk about Mecha.
Yes.
And, you know, which, of course, people who don't know what Mecha is, it's big giant robots beating the crap out of each other.
Pretty much, yeah.
It is. I mean, how can that be wrong?
Yeah, it can't be.
It's
actually
like punching a Nazi.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with punching a Nazi. Yeah.
I mean, I challenge anyone to come up with a valid argument of why punching a Nazi is wrong. Really, you can't do it.
Can't do it.
It's just not. Yeah, sorry. No.
What if it was a Nazi puppy?
It's still Nazi.
No, it's
so not, it's still a baby eating puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much.
That's one of those interesting things about.
Besides, puppies really can't make the conscious choice to be a socialist or be a.
I don't know.
Yeah, but, we're getting all existential now.
Yeah, we are. But you know, since we're completely off topic, can I say I love the microphone setup here? I'm channeling the what was that, the Schwetty Ball episode of Saturday Night Live?
People will just love to taste my sweaty balls.
It's good. It's a secret sweaty family recipe.
You have to remember it's sweaty.
Sweaty. Alright, sorry. Giant funny robots.
And our listeners are like going, oh my god.
Biggest robot ever, Big O.
Yes, Big O.
That was awesome. I hated that show.
What?
I hated it.
What? Oh man, really?
Sorry.
I actually liked it.
I liked it.
And this is from a guy who does not like anime.
I hated it because the guy came out and they kept screaming Big O, and I was like, okay, just shut the hell up.
Yeah, the English version sucked ass.
Big O!
The Japanese version was cool, though.
Yeah.
It was essentially the same show, but the voices just were better.
Very strange, yeah. But I really liked the anime style on that one.
That turned me off. I didn't want to watch it. And then Netflix had the whole series up, and I was like, well, why the hell not?
Do they have season 2 as well?
Yes, they do.
Season 2 gets weird.
Yes, it does.
Which is a problem, the problem I have with anime, is it's all good until someone shoots a hole in the moon. And you're like, going, I don't care after that.
Oh, see, that to me was one of the real attractions of anime. You know, growing up on like G.I. Joe and kind of all those things.
Where the combat webbing exploded.
Exactly.
Yes, that is so awesome.
And a ninja could punch a tank and it would fall apart.
Yeah.
Hey, no, wait.
And every time someone got shot down, you could see their parachute fly out over there.
Yeah.
And ninja could fight an Indian to a draw.
Yes.
And they would learn mutual respect.
Yes.
But to be honest, the Storm Shadow did not punch the tank once. He actually hit it in 4 different places.
That's true.
And then it vibrated so much until the screws came out.
Granted.
Yes.
Because ninjas do that.
Yeah.
They know tank pressure points.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
don't you?
Well, of course, but I couldn't tell you that. Now I have to kill you.
It's on e-how now. What are you talking about?
Oh, how to break a tank with 4 punches.
Exactly.
Yeah, the government is up in arms.
Can you put that in the show notes?
I'll try to track it down.
I'm going to put that up right now. Does MechWarrior I like.
What? MechWarrior?
Yes.
The game or the system?
Just the system in general.
Oh, or the really crappy cartoon.
Yeah, ooh. Yeah, that was not right. That was not a good.
But
you know what was even worse than MechWarrior, the cartoon? Exo Squad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
They released a series of Robotech figures. I actually had the Destroids from that.
Yeah, the bubble ships.
Yeah, yeah. But
so, okay, let's get into it. What is Mecha?
Okay, so, like I said, Mecha is the product of me watching way too many hours of Mecha anime.
There's lots of it.
Yeah, there is a lot of it. But I realized that I pretty much started off watching Robotech. And it was completely different than anything else I'd experienced at the time. Like, the main character died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man.
And I love that Robotech here is... what is it now? What is it?
Macross.
Three different series.
Yeah. Southern Cross, Muzzlepets.
Three completely unrelated TV series from Japan that they edited together here to be one long
saga. Yes, correct. So it was Super Dimensional Fortress Macross, Super Dimensional Cavalry Southern Cross.
What's interesting is there's actually like offshoot shows that are somewhat related, although they're not the same series, like Super Dimensional Century Orcus.
Well, that was actually the third series in the Super Dimensional series. They chose not to do it because they could not make it work in the continuity. Yeah.
That wasn't just the continuity they couldn't make work, but they could.
Right, right. I mean, some of the things that they did in Southern Cross, for instance, I mean, that takes place on another world with another moon and all sorts of crazy stuff. But anyway, I watched a whole bunch of this, and so I had that kind of passion going. At the same time, I decided that I really wanted to write a role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the first role-playing game I ever wrote was called Laser Tech and featured text. Yeah. And it was bloody, bloody, freaking awful. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've all done that. We've all been there.
Yeah, it's...
that's because Nathan is a mute.
Yeah.
No, I just know my limitations. I know my limitations. I may be able to give you a scenario or a layout.
I tried to make a cyberpunk game back in junior high school.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did that work out for you?
No.
Ooh, the Macro Saga RPG sourcebook.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm on the Robotech.com, which is a crazy site.
Yes, it's fantastic.
Robotech's crazy popular though. So I mean, Robotech was a big influence in it. So, I mean, you had Robotech, you had, out here it was Robotech, then it was Southern Cross, and then it was Next Generation.
Yeah.
And then there was a Robotech 2, and I think Robotech 2, The Sentinels, that movie was probably the first, real Robotech thing.
That was the first American.
Yeah, and then the third one, Robotech, the Shadow Chronicles. That was. I think also, so. Really, it's only those are the two that were authentically made Robotech things.
And I don't think I'll get lynched by the fans too much by saying that it's the quality difference is certainly there. The original still stands up.
I've just been a huge fan of Next Generation because I love the Invid.
I always really loved the
Invid. Just were awesome, and the Alpha Fighter was just badass.
Yeah, I was a beta fan myself because it carries just a ton of missiles. You pilot the Alpha, I'll pilot the Beta, and we'll give you some dead Invid. That's all I'm saying.
This is the sad thing is I like the weird offshoot Macross stuff. Like, I like Macross 2.
Right.
The movie. I thought the movie was wonderful.
Do You Believe in Love or something like that? Was that the subtitle for that one?
I don't remember. I've got it on DVD over there.
Sweet.
I love Macross Plus. That's still one of my favorite ones with the two fighters fighting off against each other. Macross 7 was really, really good. But like everybody's always talking about like Macross B.
Yeah.
And I hated that one. With the guitar and stuff.
Yeah.
The first Robotech series had the SDF one, which was pretty sweet.
Yes. And the giant cannon.
Hey, that pops
up. Was that like a mile wide cannon?
That was a Macross that ship was in Macross 2 and Macross Plus, but it settled into the water net to never move again. It's just a giant robot form.
That's pretty awesome. It was the first time I remember seeing a show like that, where because the first Robotech was on TV, you know, as a kid, and I remember not only do I remember character dying, you know, it was it was much more soap opery. I mean, there was a romance in it. There were whole episodes that go by without, you know, any big huge battles going on. And I remember it was interesting to watch, you know, even as a kid, you know, it's not the same kind of animation you're
yep.
seeing.
Yep.
But, you know, going back and looking at it, remembering it, like, I remember when the SDF-1 first powers up and the engines, like, just rip out of the ship and keep going. And it's like, that's stuff you just don't see in American animation. At least then you didn't see in American animation.
Because they didn't build the ship strong enough to withstand the force of the engine.
Well, those, it depends on what continuity you're
and those Battaloids yeah. were just awesome.
Yes.
You know? That's where it comes. The Veritech fighters were just so awesome.
Yeah, I liked the Destroids.
Yeah.
Like I like the Defender.
They really didn't do much with the Destroids in the first series.
No, very little.
It was very much the Veritech.
Yeah. I like the ones, you know, where they had like the big huge gun arms, because I actually used to have that toy.
Nice. But yeah, no, I agree. And so I think that Robotech really stuck with me. I didn't get to see a lot of it as a child, but it was so much better.
I've got
it all too now. As an adult, I've gone back and indulged in a lot of the things that I wish I could have indulged in as a child for like twice the cost of what it would have cost me in 1980. But anyway, but I mean that had always stuck with me. And so then I started, like in high school, you know, started getting more into not only gaming but into anime. Back when it was called Japanimation.
Oh yes.
Yeah, and you were really cool.
I remember the Japanimation section at Hastings.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, and then in college, just happened to find some old Southern Cross stuff in a used van. So I mean, it's always stuck with me. But at the same time. Oh, and I played the Palladium role-playing game a lot, but I was also a huge Battletech player to the point where I can stat certain mechs from memory.
I am a big fan of Battletech too. So
see, I never got a chance to play Battletech. I played
it's crunchy as
I played
it's
Mech Warrior.
Crunchy. Yeah, it does take some time, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a war game.
I take
it
back.
So.
Yeah. I did play it at the first CanCon, and I got my ass handed to me.
It is a fun game. The first salvo of rounds wiped out both my mechs. It is crunchy as all get out, but I mean, in a game will take you 4+ hours to play, and that's a short game.
Yep.
And everything is statted out, and it all makes sense. Like the heat sinks and all that stuff. It's very daunting. But then it makes sense in the game and it works and stuff like Battletech was great.
It's like Warhammer. You sit down and you have campaigns for years.
Yep.
I mean, my uncle used to do that. He was part of a group that they had campaigns for years and they had different groups and you know, that's what they did. So
And I played the Battletech Crescent Hawks Inception on the Commodore.
God, that game is so awesome. And they had the sequel,
Revenge
too.
Was better. Yeah, the Crescent Hawks Revenge.
Yeah, I never played that one. I played the first one.
Yeah, that one was only available on the PC, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I actually got it as like a best of, so it had Inception and Revenge and the original MechWarrior game.
Yeah, which I actually have a copy of somewhere, and that was, for its time, was incredible.
Yeah,
I mean,
you
look at it now
shot,
and you just laugh at it, but
it's
fun for what it was, though.
But still, MechWarrior 2 still is pretty impressive. Sit down and play it.
I think
now.
It's the best of all the MechWarrior games, to be honest with you. That was definitely my favorite.
I don't know, MechWarrior 4 Mercenaries was pretty well done.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I always liked 2 better. I thought 3 was an absolute waste of time for a number of
MechWarrior
reasons.
MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries.
I mean, obviously, there's a huge amount of. I mean, the America's got a huge love of the big robots beating the crap out of each other, too. So, I mean, Japan sort of came up with it, and we just ran with it and loved it.
Yep.
And, I mean, the role-playing games I at least remember back in the day was obviously Robotech from Palladium. There was also Mechton.
Mechton, yep.
And I think there was one called Mecha.
There was Mecha with an exclamation point.
Yes.
And that was a miniatures game.
Yeah, I remember. Okay, I remember that one.
Heavy Gear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Heavy Gear, and obviously Battletech.
Like,
They
actually folded their legs down into like tank treads and like zipped across the battlefield.
Yeah, that computer game was also a lot of fun.
Well, was some of the people
played the second one, but I never played the first one.
Mm-hmm. They were good. So those were sort of what fed into your
or even other mechs like from Warhammer 40K. That's true. Older mechs, or even from their miniature, the tiny game which had the huge mech.
I think it's interesting that you see mechs show up in a lot of different scenarios. I mean, Avatar. For instance, as did District 9.
District 9, Matrix Revolutions,
awesome
Adam.
Yeah,
I like the mechs of District 9.
Those were really neat.
Yeah.
And other animes like Escaflowne.
Yeah, Escaflowne. I enjoyed Escaflowne. Not as much as some others, but I have enjoyed that one. That one I kind of like for its crazy gonzo-ness, although it's not amongst mecha anime subgenres. So yes, a subgenre of a subgenre of a...
Yeah, there's a... What's that one called?
It's my least... I don't like it as well.
Oh, I can't remember the name of it. It's, people start off, they live under the surface of the planet, and... what's it called? It has a weird name.
Botoms?
No, not Votoms, but the Votoms is actually pretty decent.
Yeah, I really enjoy Votoms.
No, it has like a weird name, and there's two guys. One's a young boy who finds like this little robot thing. It's like a head. And the other one like steals a robot from someone else, and they merge together to make this big thing. God, I can't remember what it's called now.
Gigantor?
Well, there's Robocop has the mech that he fights.
That's true, ED-209.
ED-209 is awesome.
There's the cartoon. What's the cartoon with the lion and
Voltron.
Voltron.
Yeah, this is actually Lion Gatai.
Beast King Gillian.
We're talking real Voltron, not the crappy car Voltron.
I actually have the first disc of that actual.
Do you really?
Yeah, DVD.
Nice.
I bought it from back when Netflix. You know, we used to like sell their used games.
Look, hey.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'd watched it and I liked it. It was like, that's another one where one of the main characters gets killed on like the seventh
Lance,
or eighth episode.
No, it's not Lance. It was, Sven in the American cartoon.
Yeah, I don't know what he was called.
I can't remember. It's not.
But
it's not Sven.
He got killed by the
queen, the witch queen.
Yeah, and so his place in the robot got taken over by the princess.
Yep.
I mean, mecha type things, and I mean, in so many things.
Yes,
it doesn't even have to be science fiction necessarily. It can even be that science fiction fantasy mix.
Yeah.
It's just people just love giant robots and giant robot type things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, steampunk has been great for throwing mecha into places where they haven't been before.
Oh, steampunk mecha? I love steampunk.
Like big steampunk giant spiders.
If you give me a steampunk mecha...
There it is.
You know anything about giant spiders, Chris?
We're not talking about Wild Wild West.
I just remember the name of the show. I found it. Gurren Lagann.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about that, but I just couldn't
remember, like, what the hell is the name of the show?
Well, Wild Wild West was a horrible movie, but...
Yeah,
it still had a giant mecha in it.
Ah, there's Macross Plus.
Yep. Yeah. This is it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Steampunk.
There's definitely a lot of it.
Mecha are awesome.
So you when did you sit down and
Full Metal Panic?
When did mecha come about for you? I mean,
that's a great question. So I'm 2005, I would say, is when I first said, I'm going to do it. I was listening to the Sons of Kraus podcast. And was
Are they still doing stuff?
Unfortunately not. If you guys hear this podcast, I'm shaking my fist too angrily.
I remember the Sons of Kraus.
It was a great podcast. And they had a lot of game designers who were doing indie, let's not talk about small press or store games, anything like that. But, people who were doing... role-playing games that weren't Blotsy, they weren't some of the bigger companies. And I'm like, okay, I can do this.
And this is born out of the time, though. All of us really remember, a lot of us have been to Gen Con numerous times. Like, I remember when D20 came out, there was several years there where D20 was the overshadowing, mastermind. It was there, and there were other things there, but I remember, especially at Gen Con, before D20 came out, when you went there, there was lots of variety. There was tons of these other games. And then D20 came out, and then they were all gone. You had to hunt them out, but they were... And in recent years, that stuff has been coming back, which is nice.
Yep. A lot of people call it the Forge Diaspora, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I really got inspired to do that, and so I decided I was going to write a game called Neon Genesis Envoy, about giant fighting robots. And somebody said, hey, that's great, but don't tie yourself down to one...
Evangelion.
One, well, one genre.
First, you're going to get sued by Evangelion.
Yeah.
And so then number two was don't tie yourself down to any particular genre. So that's when we decided to call it Mecha and release it as... originally, I was calling it a genre emulation toolkit. Because I thought it sounded very snooty.
Exactly. Well, yes, old man.
It's the type of game you play with the pinkies up.
Exactly. It's roller dice quite, with
quite
a finger.
Quite a nice game.
yes, darling.
But really, my ultimate goal was to watch mecha anime and then be able to translate that directly on... on the play on the table,
which is not easy to do. I mean, obviously, you have different shows do things differently, but
yes.
I mean, I know watching Robotech and watching the Invid stuff. I mean, I love those. I love the clouds of missiles heading way. It's like that was just awesome.
Was always incredible. With them.
I mean, I tried. Yeah, I ran a one shot one time of Robotech using the feng shui rules.
See, that's
and
awesome.
That kind of worked.
Yep.
That was way crazy over the top, but there really aren't very good ways to emulate it.
Right.
So.
And that was,
because you either get way too complicated.
Right.
Which you can do. If that's what you want to do, go that way,
Yep.
Or you need to really have it simplified to be a lot more cinematic.
Yeah. That's it exactly. And I will preface everything I say about, other mecha games as there's really no such thing as a bad mecha game, as far as I'm concerned. And quite frankly, there have been a number of times when people have approached me on RPGNet and said, I'm looking for a game that does this, this, and this. Well, you probably want to play Mechton Zeta then. And, I'm very upfront about that, that mecha is very cinematic, it is very rules light. And so I sort of say, this is how this is the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Things like a mini missile attack are fluff, are
mm-hmm.
setting, are narration that you put on top of mm-hmm. an attack roll. So I say how to do an attack roll. You and the players and the GMs, you guys figure out how to make it, mecha. Can I say badassery?
You can say badassery.
Okay, so you guys PG-13. So then you guys turn it into mecha badassery. It's been an approach that people who like it have seemed to really like. Mm-hmm. And that's all I've asked for. So. That process didn't happen at all quickly. First of all, I got to watch a lot of anime, and my wife, who's supported the project, didn't watch much of it with me, but at least understood that I was doing research, which was
mm-hmm.
awesome.
Great research for games is fun.
It was,
yeah. I was doing research for my Deadlands game. I was watching lots of spaghetti westerns, like,
Yeah.
When you can get away with stuff like that, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to be able to hear that.
It's also, yours is an excuse to watch Robotech again.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I know, and I got my son turned on to...
that's awesome.
And so,
getting the new generation of kids into it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'd always be afraid that they think it's kind of hokey, because it's not, but it's got a lot of action and whatnot. Like, I got a friend of ours has a kid, and we've gotten him really into Darkwing Duck,
Nice.
And it's like, I'm very surprised that he's into it because it's an older cartoon,
You go back and you watch it now, stuff and you like go, the, wow, what it, did I like about this show?
It just shows that, those old cartoons can sometimes hold up,
What's interesting, you look at, like, some of the cartoons we watched when we were really young, like G.I. Joe or Transformers or He-Man, and you just go, these don't hold up.
Yeah, like, I can't watch Thundercats. Thundercats is
cool.
Voltron actually holds up bad.
Watching the ones from later on, like Tailspin, Darkwing Duck, a lot of the Disney ones, they still actually, my wife still loves to watch Gummy Bears. I never watched it really when I was a kid, but it's interesting to watch it now, because it's like, wow, every one of these stories has a moral.
So you got to watch lots of Robotech.
I did.
And other mecha stuff.
And so what I did was I took what I saw on the screen and I said, okay, what are other games not doing to reflect kind of what I see on the screen? And I didn't do that out of any sense of, hey, these games are screwed up, they're terrible. I wanted mecha to speak with a unique voice amongst the genre of mecha role-playing games. So I thought it was important that it did something that was different. And what I found was that a lot of those games were very, very nuts and bolts driven. I mean, you know, Battletech is largely a point-buy system.
Mm-hmm.
You've got tons, and you use your tonnage to buy engines and, you know, all this kind of stuff.
I mean, Battletech is, I mean, like we were talking about, there's a cinematic scale and there's the crunchy scale. Yep. Battletech is very deep in the crunchy scale. Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, Mechton Zeta
and
is
it's still a good game. I mean, this is by no means saying that that's a crappy game, one or the other. I mean, they're different styles. I love Battletech. I mean, I'm all for throwing down a quick game of Battletech anytime because it's a fun game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, there's a reason it's been around for...
You're right.
Unfortunately, there's not really a way to do a lunch.
Yeah,
I disagree with that. Mega Mech would be one way to do that. You can play online and save your game and come back to it later. Even
that's true.
So I decided to go cinematic because it was not necessarily the undiscovered country, but certainly the road less traveled amongst mecha games. It also appeals to my personal style of running games and what I enjoy playing. You know, of the guiding principles that I built into Mecha, one of them is math isn't fun. So, I mean, there's very, very little math involved.
You don't want to sit there and try to figure out.
No, like the Renegade Legion. I still remember this. To make a tank in the Renegade Legion game, which was another FASA war game, you had to do square roots of engine power.
Oh, I remember. Okay, yeah.
And,
And
I basically said no. Like, that would never happen.
Square roots?
Yeah, you had to do square roots. And so I said addition.
Whoever designed that's just a loved algebra too much. Loved calculus way too much.
And there were a lot of things that were really great about Renegade Legion. That was just not my favorite.
Yeah, it was just not one of them. Sorry, when I go to play a game and I hear the word square root, I'm going to be like, what?
Yeah, you want me to?
I will punch you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Mecha is very, very cinematic and very abstract, but... I look at abstraction as a canvas upon which gamers and GMs paint pretty much anything they want. So a lot of the rules in the game talk about, you know, how you bring certain genres to life, how you make things that you see on the screen significant and fun at the table, because I didn't necessarily want to come up with a rule for everything. I didn't think I needed to, and I mean, I've played Mecha a lot over the last 4 years, and it's still, I mean, it stands up. I still enjoy playing it, even though, you know, I play it so
much. You said you started developing it in 2004 or 5, right?
Yeah, 5, I mean, it came out in 2008.
So we're talking, it's 7 years on now.
Yeah,
which kind of blows your mind, probably.
Oh, yeah, that just, I hurt now. Because really, it was about 2 years, really, to get Mecha published.
This is really before print on demand was readily available.
Correct. So I mean, Lulu was in its infancy. Just starting out. Yeah.
So I think now we've got 3 or 4 different. We've got tons of different places you can use. But yeah.
Yep. And we actually use Lightning Source for all of our publishing because they treat us well. Yeah. So the thing was I think it's a funny story. So I like telling it. I presented a playtest document to some playtesters, and the only thing that stuck, there's two things that stuck from that original manuscript. The first is the basic die mechanic, where skills are your target numbers and you roll set of dice under your attributes. And I didn't even come up with that. I stole that from Andrew Castle.
I've always been a fan of, you know, things like that, or things like Savage Worlds, where when the player is rolling, they already know what the target number is. Yeah. The GM doesn't have to set difficulties and stuff like that. But modifiers aren't necessary. But I really like that. It helps take the load off of the GM a lot.
Yeah. And we can talk about that in a minute. The first thing that survived was that die mechanic. And the second thing that survived was Biker's Parent. Because, I mean, literally, the original playtest document was still called Neon Genesis Honor Blade. So nothing else survived. We went through so many iterations, taking it, you know, and it was almost a subtractive process.
You really have to be willing to throw everything away and start over.
Yeah, fortunately, I got to throw out small pieces at a time.
Sure.
But really, what we came up with was something that is unique. that really allows us to represent what's out there in the world of anime. And I like the hand gesture I just made. No one can just see. Mm-hmm. And
it's great radio.
Thank you. Yeah. And so, but that was important. It was most important for me to serve the game and not try to put a bunch of things in there that really didn't add anything. So the funny thing, of course, about all that is I'm working on a game now called Mecha Mercenaries, which actually puts a lot of that stuff back in, but in a way that more that is still as streamlined and cinematic as Mecha is.
So it's much more of a, you have the main Mecha book, and then you have sort of the Savage Worlds mentalities. You have the core book, and then you have settings that use that basically as a framework.
Yep. And
it's a pick your flavor, pick your poison type of thing.
Essentially, yeah. And so we've got one supplement out right now, which is, runs off the core system, adds a few little rules, and actually I'm using supplements to add rules that kind of mm-hmm. make sense. So there's a relationship mechanic in Mechagana, which is Bollywood, India style with Mecha. Yeah, which is.
Do they break
awesome.
Into song?
There is a dance mechanic in it, yes.
Alrighty.
And the different archetypes are actually. That is some wonderful dancing, guys.
Yep,
appreciate
it's
it.
Radio.
Yeah. but some of the archetypes actually, they are different roles that you would have in a Bollywood film. So there's like. Your popularity with the audience is a mechanic.
Where did this idea come from? Okay. I mean, were you just sitting there watching some Bollywood?
Heck no. I know. This
you don't watch Bollywood? Bollywood is awesome.
No.
It came to you in a dream, a small midget
know, see,
came
I could never, backwards. Guys, I could never come up with something like this. This is actually, and let this be a warning to everyone who hears this, if you suggest something to me on RPGNet, be prepared to write it. Because there's a guy named Jake Baker who suggested, hey, we should have Bollywood Mecha. I'm like, yes, now you can write it. And he's like, oh, I don't want to write it. I'm like, yes, you really do. So we talked about it, and you know, I convinced him to write the game, and he did. He knew all about it. There's four different settings in there. I'm actually running a game of it at CanCon. It's none of me. It was all Jake Baker. He's fantastic. But there's also like some relationship mechanics and that kind of stuff in it. So, it's a good time.
I love the randomness of the industry sometimes.
But yeah, it was, he said it. He said it. And I said, yes, write that. And, I will make sure that you are paid for it. And it happened. So, and that actually you can download for free off the Heroic Journey website. And if you like it, you can donate, and we'll pay for part out of the funds. We're kind of going with the Eclipse phase model on that one.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Art's always a pain.
Art, yeah.
Art is expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but especially for mecha books, because really they are very visually oriented.
And then get away with releasing some superhero stuff with the free art that you can get off RPG Now or the same, but no one sells Mecha art. It just doesn't exist.
Yeah, there, and
you
apparently
actually
not every.
Have someone do it specifically for you.
And I've been blessed to find some really talented artists. The guy who did the Mechiana cover, for instance, mm-hmm. Was very easy to work with.
We'll have to put you in touch with our friend Amanda. She does.
You show me some of her stuff. She's good.
She does a lot very anime style. So
very nice. Yep.
All right. Now, with Mecha, Mecha came out the door, obviously, and is still available as a PDF, right?
It's actually available. Nobody knows this for reasons I can't fully understand, but you can actually still buy the soft cover on Indie Press Revolution. You have to search for Mecha-RPG, and then it will show up.
Okay.
But if you search for Mecha or Mecha,
I'll try to put a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that'd be great because we don't. We don't sell a lot of copies off the website, I think, for that reason, which is fantastic. But we sell a lot of PDFs.
And the PDF is not overly expensive.
I mean, it's $12 for four.
Which is great. Is it a digest sized book, the actual soft cover?
Yes.
Is it,
it's a 6x9 book.
So I think I've seen it. I've seen physically seen the copy of it. I think it was your copy.
one of the few hardcovers still in existence. What's that? Or not for sale, but I know of.
Not for sale.
Yeah, no, that was a, we did a one-time only print cover of our backs. We tend to make those limited edition.
Yeah, because they're very, very expensive.
Yep.
Print, I mean, print costs are ridiculous for small print.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the crosshairs mechanic, that the target thing
sure.
you have going on in there.
So,
because I actually thought that was pretty cool.
About 50% of the people love it, about 50% of the people hate it. So
it's abstract, and you got to sort of get your brain around it.
Yeah, I mean, it's different than, again, BattleTech or Mechton or any of those things that use a more traditional style battle map. The mech is fought on what's called the bullseye battle map. So if you can imagine basically like a archery circle, but then put crosshairs on it. So it's divided into 13 sectors, and keeps battles very tight, very contained, and very fast. So the farthest you'll ever be from a target is 6 sectors, and you can pretty much move and hit someone, you know, first turn. And the game is pretty much designed for fast combat.
Yeah.
So, and the funny thing is that came about purely by accident. I was reading, I think it was Weapon of the Gods, and they had 3 ranges. It was like close and medium and far or something like that. And I'm like, okay, maybe all mecha weapons should have that. And we ended up trying it and drawing it out on a battle map with erasable markers, and that became how we were going to fight. And, I mean, it simulates really the intensity of the point of an anime episode where the battle is committed. You know, there's no more maneuvering. There's just shooting mini missiles and seeing who can backflip out of the way and who gets blown up. So, I really like it for that. It does take some getting used to, and I'm fully aware of that. And it has been house ruled out of a number of games, and there's some really good ways to find it online if you do that. But I still love it that way because I'm not a fan of the like 2-session, 8-hour like epic battles. I like to get in, get out. And the rules in Mecha basically say the GM, once a turn, is going to start fight. So you know there's going to be combat. So the combat should further the purposes of storytelling.
Well, it's sort of the purpose of having giant robots is to beat the crap out of each other.
Exactly.
I mean, you're not playing a game like Mecha to have intellectual discussions between the mechas, to sit down and have tea. Although, maybe that's the next game topic.
Yeah, I was going to say, should I stop writing? Tea time
with Mecha. I don't know. Maybe. I don't think it would sell well.
No,
honestly, it might be good in Britain. But, you know.
Afternoon tea with Mr. Mecha.
Yes. All right,
that could be a donation point
on the Kickstarter. Yes. Now, speaking of which, one of the big reasons I wanted to get you on right now is because through May 31st, I think is the end of it. You're running a Kickstarter for a new NECA.
Yes.
Now this is the supplement.
The second supplement for NECA called NECA Combiners, which goes back to basically it is Voltron rules. So it is taking your individual mecha and bringing them together to
form the head.
Yes, and forming heads, blazing swords, and other body parts as well.
And I'll form the head.
And that's actually what we wanted to call it, was mecha and I'll form the head. the problem with that is the mecha, the lawyers out there, I think, said, and we'll form the legal documents.
Yes. Yes.
And so Mecha Combiners is what we ended up calling it. It's Super Robots. It was not a supplement that I ever thought I would end up doing when I wrote Mecha. The funny thing was, I would start telling people about this. First question out of their mouth, can you do Voltron rules? No, you can't do Voltron rules. Hey, can you do Voltron rules? No, we already covered this. And so as I was walking around at Gen Con, handing it out to people. They're like, hey, does this do Voltron? So Mark Reed, who owns Hero Journey, took me out to lunch, says, you're going to come up with Voltron rules. So I don't want to do it. And we're sitting down, and he's telling me, he's like, not going to let me get up until I come up with something. And the problem that I always had with how do you do combining robots in a way that, again, doesn't require you to do like averages or something like that. Because you want rules that allow you to do
And what you're talking about, the whole legality thing, I would say if people can get away with putting out a role-playing game called Bounty Head Bebop, there you go.
It's a sticking point.
Bounty Head Bebop.
Thanks, Ethan. Sure. Yes, I was telling the story about how Kamada is coming out. It's much more interesting than basking. Other heroic journey titles. So there we were trying to figure it out. And so basically the idea was, how do you make five lions joining together as powerful as 18 cars, submarines, and airplanes from Power of Voltron?
That was a completely different series.
Yeah, Armored Something Die Rugger, yeah. We came up with the idea. Well, I came home, I playtested it, it worked, we tweaked it, I playtested some more, and hence, now we have combiners. So it's up on Kickstarter right now, and it's about, at this point, about 71% funded, which is like pretty amazing. So, I'm really excited about it.
I'll load it up, see where it's at here in a second, but... Yeah. So you're at 71% funded, and I know you have various tiers going on. You are planning on a print version of it, obviously.
Yeah. So the sort of the basic tiers, if you want to get combined with the game, there's a PDF tier, a softcover tier, a hardcover tier, and then those come with various other things, dice and unit patches and. I couldn't tell if you were wanting me to go faster or because I can talk really fast if you want machine. No, and so but then also people were asking, could they get the original mecha books as well, so you can tack $8 or $18 onto your order to get mecha softcover or mecha PDF to go along with it. So. And then there's some bigger tiers, like Noah, who I'm sure you've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
He's in. He's going to get some cool stuff. And then another guy who I've never met is actually going to take me up on the running the Skype game offer.
Nice.
But yeah, so we're close enough. And I actually announced this at when we hit $1,000. But the stretch goals are what I'm really the most excited about. Because Kickstarter really doesn't want you to do, like, hey, fund my, like, company kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what we've decided is for every $1,000 that we go over the initial amount, we're going to release another mecha book.
Nice.
So but the product roadmap for mecha right now is 16 books in total. So
you're at just over 1,400.
Yeah. So, yeah. About 71%, 72%, something like that. And so for every $1,000 that we go over, that's another for sure PDF book. My new arch nemesis in this life is shipping, there are a lot of people who seem to like the game who are either in Canada, Australia, or Singapore, and I love the fact that I'm getting international exposure. I never thought that would happen. Getting books of them
is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah,
you're at 72% on
it. Yes. All right.
As of today, I mean, you're with 33 days left to go. You're on target.
Yeah, yeah. Although I can't get any more money out of my mom to make that.
Yeah, sadly. Anymore,
so yeah. the hope is we'll hit 3,000, because at $3,000, that's when I'll release Mecha Mercenaries, and then at 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, on to whatever, I'm opening it up to backers, and backers will get to vote as to which book. Comes next. The only book we think probably won't be eligible for that is Mechayana, because we already have other backers for that who have contributed rather generously to it. Mm-hmm. But anything else, so a Mecha West, which is sort of weird West with Mecha, Mecha
giant guts and robots.
Cavalry troops of Mecha. It's really awesome. Mecha Gladiators. Yeah, that was a good one. I did like Robot Wars a lot. Yeah.
Those old full moon movies. Or new moon rising movies, Robot Wars.
I think I was thinking about Robot Jocks.
Actually. All I'm thinking
Robot
of Robot Jocks.
Robot Jocks.
Yeah,
is one.
Yeah.
There was another
I own that on DVD.
Do you really?
I found it in the clearance aisle at Half Price Bookstore for $2. I'm like, that's worth $2.
That is worth $2.
I remember that movie.
It's definitely worth $2.
That was a terrible, awesome movie. And I watched it. Was like, wow, this is bad. I love it.
Yeah, the aesthetics of that.
Scott Glenn.
The aesthetics of that world, I guess, actually are coloring the setting that I want to do for Mecha Gladiators, which will be, I'm going to blow out the battle map, so instead of three rings, it's six or nine, and fight more like a Solar 7, basically, so there'll be traps and drones and crazy things like that to make one-on-one combat more interesting and underground mecha fight pits and stuff. But the setting I have for that goes back to the original Neon Genesis Honor Blade. It would be called Avalon Battle Slave. Mm-hmm. So you play zombie, like resurrected zombie pilots. So you could be like Napoleon, who's like knows how to fight in mecha. And if you win, your family gets resurrected along with you. And if you lose, they come and take your family and kill them again. So,
hey.
Yeah, I'm really a nice person. But yeah, so...
Yeah, we can tell.
Yeah. So we've got that, then there's Mecha Living Robots, that will be the Transformers style. Mark Reed from Heroic Journey really liked Headmasters, so he's been begging me to do a Headmasters supplement. I want to do Mecha in Space, because there's been a lot of questions recently about how you do, like, Star Destroyers, like big, naval battles also involving Mecha, so... There's a whole bunch of things that I'm hoping that will go beyond the original 2000. So that
obviously Robotech was a big influence. I mean, they had the big naval ships running around in space too. So.
And just every time you see
so did Voltron.
Every time you say Mechas in Space, all I did think of was just a parody of
Muppets.
Muppets.
Mechas in Space.
Yes.
And then, even in some of my weaker moments, I've been coming up with, like, a Mecha Claus, because I think a Mecha Santa Claus supplement would be fun, with, like, little robot elves.
Be a good Christmas.
That's kind of what I was going with, but that would actually, I want to do some solo player rules.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to use the Mecha rules to deliver presents without the kids waking up, and some things like that is kind of what I'm thinking
about. I just make it into a card game or something.
Yeah, do that too. I actually have thought about doing a mecha board game, which would sort of allow you to do the invading a planet, but then if you want to drop into an individual battle, you could play that out with the mecha rules.
Like have a double-sided board, have one on one side of the planet, side on the other side of the map.
Essentially, yep. Because I think that can be a lot of fun. That one will probably break the mold, because everything else to date I've done, like the relationship mechanics are done actually on the same bullseye that you fight on. Negotiating the contract to mecha mercenaries is done on the bullseye battle map that you fight on. So I've really tried to unify the mechanics as much as I can. I would say that, a planet is significantly bigger than, say, a complex. So I've got some thinking ahead on that.
If you think about it this way, you can do the same three rings, have the center ring be the planet, traditional rings of actual space combat that you can do with the ship battles to get your ships to actually.
Yeah, you restrict the movement more, and it's something that we would gladly help you with.
Okay.
You would gladly help. I'm more than willing to bat around ideas, but I don't want...
I love mechanics.
I can make suggestions, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Will you play the game if I come up with something? Yeah. All right, there we go. All right,
done.
I beta test, and I'll
we'll pretty much play whatever put in front of us at least once.
Nice. All right.
We were going to play Mecha last year before the con when we went to go do Oklahoma Joe's.
This part of we did.
I wasn't able to.
I played.
Yeah, that's right. I remember.
I played Combiners.
That's true. You did. That was the, I think that was the last, well, other than the con games around that was the last playtest. Actually, I playtested Mercenaries at Camp Con last year. And it works.
And we're definitely getting some. We've already said we're getting Mecha at CampCon this year. It'll be a lot of fun. How many of those have you run in? Do you remember? Four.
I'm up for 10. Four events. I think I'm two Mecha, one of the 4CDM I was talking about, and then I got a Wild Hare to run some Renegade Legion Interceptor.
Nice.
I'm As far as I know, as of this time, I haven't actually posted anything yet to the submission yet. But I'm gonna run probably one game a day.
I thought you were gonna run anything.
I wasn't gonna run anything, but then
I'm not running anything this year. But then we
got the promotion from the company,
mm-hmm.
and I thought maybe I'll run one something once a day, so we have make sure that we have enough games.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna run a Hollow Earth Expedition game. I'm gonna run another one of the Rocket Ships and Spaceman mm-hmm. game. And then I'll run, of course, because everyone always asks me to, I'll run a Call of Cthulhu game. But everyone's like, we want you to run Call of Cthulhu because there's no Call of Cthulhu games. There's tons of Call of Cthulhu games now.
Beth's going to do a Call of Cthulhu game.
Aha, corrupted.
It's going to be the first game she's running.
So, who's she going to run you guys through it as a beta test to see how it works?
She's actually planning on running, there's some sorority sisters of her up at school who want to play.
Oh my god!
And so she's going to test drive it with them, and then probably test drive it with a group down here at some point before. But yeah,
that's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be Pulp Era 1940s.
That's good.
We're encouraging her to do this. It's great. I just decided I'm not gonna run anything too.
Well, I didn't want to because out of all the CanCons we've run, I've got to play it one. Game. The entire like we're on our fourth year now. I've played one game and it was last year.
Oh, I was under orders last year to play something.
Yeah.
And you were pudding.
Huh?
You were pudding.
I was pudding, yes.
Yes. Pudding pony.
I actually got to play several things, a few things last year. But yeah, Mecha will be at CantCon.
Yes, absolutely.
That'll be a lot of fun. You going to Gen Con this year?
Yeah, funny story. I have a ticket. I am signed up to run three events. I now have a car that won't start. So it's very possible that my Mecha travel or my GenCon travel budget is gonna go to fix my car. We'll see. I don't know. Are you going?
No. I gotta save for a wedding. But we're planning
priorities, man. Priorities.
Hey, we're actually already booked into a bed and breakfast for next year's Gen Con. It's gonna be our honeymoon. So
nice.
We're gonna try to get one of the VIG.
Sweet.
My wife and I haven't been in years, so more than likely we will be going this year.
That's right.
Well, there's just no money. I mean, when you figure that I'm paying out, when I'm working, I'm paying out almost $900 a month in student loan repayment because my school was stupid and split it across four schools or four loan departments. You'll be fine. Yeah, all of them want $200 every month each.
Nice.
Yeah,
you can't consolidate?
Well, I would, but the thing is one of my companies is selling A, and getting the information so I can consolidate from them, they've refused to give me the information for the past 8 months, even though they're technically not legally...
This is all fascinating.
It has nothing
but
to do
I don't
with
think our listeners care.
Yeah. It's just one more way that Sally Mae tries to screw people over.
And Sally Mae, I'm sure, has mechs. So,
they got those Japanese robot walkers, you know, those $500,000 ones that move.
Well, that's where all the money goes.
Yes, there you go.
That must be it.
There you go. But I think as far as game options nowadays for role playing in a mecha setting, you have very few options. I know Palladium is back to publishing the Robotech thing, but I think they've only got one or two books for it still. So.
Three. I think they're coming out with four.
I know they put out the Shadow Chronicles RPG and then
Masters and Macross.
And so there's not a lot of options out there anymore. I mean, a lot of what people go for, especially with the mech oriented stuff, is the Battletech. You know, it's that war game tabletop stuff. So
yeah, and I've had to fight that a little bit. And it's been
I'm sure. Yeah,
and it hasn't been bad. I have, like I said, there's. That will appeal to a lot of people. It appeals to me, but there are certain people who pick up Mecha.
It's one of those things that niche is filled.
Yes,
I mean,
if you
like that, there are plenty of options out there to get. I mean, BattleTech pretty much is great for that. So.
Absolutely, and so I really wanted, I really wanted to be different, and so I think Mecha.
Well, there's no use in competing with that. You know, I mean, they've got 30 years of diehard, absolutely rabid fan base for it.
Of which I am one, so I would be competing against my own fandom. And
exactly.
That would be, silly. So, but you know, cinematic I think is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So Mecha
definitely quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One session of combat in Mecha only takes 20 minutes?
Yeah, if that, yeah.
If that. It depends on how complicated it is, but, you know, one session of Battletech takes 6 hours.
One turn of Battletech takes an hour. One turn!
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
But,
I played Warhammer game that would have gone faster than that. Ouch.
But, Mecha is very fast. And there's even ways to make it faster, like using the tactical waypoint. You designate a sector, and you say if you start off controlling that sector, you've won the game. So it's the high ground.
You've won the combat.
That a lot of people don't really like that until they play with it. And I think
I think GMs would probably really be happy for it because how many times have you as a GM, you know, you're getting till 11:45 at night, and you're ready to go home and go to bed, and you've got one last combat going, you know, and it's like, okay, all right, everyone roll initiative, and then you're there for another hour and a half. And, you know, with that sort of mechanic, it's, okay, waypoint, go.
Yeah, and I run the game enough. I don't do this in cons, but there have been times when I've just been playing where I've been like, okay, I'm ready to leave, so I will do things so that I don't end up taking the waypoint. Or I'm like, oh, I'm going to attack the guy who hit me rather than get the waypoint. Oh, darn, we're all going home. See you, good night. But actually, I think that Mech is very GM-friendly. It was written to be very GM-friendly. Not at the expense of players, but I can run a game now with no prep, and I can tell anyone else how to do it. You know, it's all based around character sheets telling you everything you need to know how to do it. Mm-hmm. Characters have traits. Characters have goals. Figure out how to make those goals.
And it's a D6
conflict.
Mechanic, if memory serves.
Yes. D6 dice pool. So it's pretty easy to get the fundamentals of. But one of the things that I've been pressing people who write mecha supplements and make myself do this is there are lots of charts in mecha. So one of the things that I noticed with, say, Combiners, going back to the Kickstarter, is that a lot of the Voltron shows were very monster of the week, right?
Mm-hmm.
King Garakon comes up with some creature and sends it to Planet Alora, and Voltron fights it.
They combine to be Voltron, then defeat it.
Form Blazing Sword, then they
Wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that was pretty much the show.
And so you can do that style of gaming. You can randomly roll for everything you need to know for your big bads.
Nice.
You know, with a canonical setting, but that can be changed to, you know, anything else. So really, you can be like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Roll. Okay, here's my bad guy, and go with it. Because I mean, that was. I understand that, you know, a lot of times mecha will make it picked up in kind of a fast setting. So there's very few barriers to just getting down these things and dice, which I like.
Excellent. I think we've been going on a bit for this, so we're actually going to take a bit of a break, and we will be back with the three-parter right after this. And we are back, and today on the three-parter, I know I've got a bit of a shameless plug going. I guess really it's more of a four-parter, because we got four people.
Yes, we do.
Four-parter this time. Special, extra, just for our listeners.
Nice.
I've got some shameless plugging to do, as I am prone to do.
I'm going to do what I'm into. I'm going to talk about some of the Kickstarter stuff I've been looking at, and a book I just recently read.
Nice. And Chris, we're going to talk a bit more about your Kickstarter, I'm assuming?
I'll talk about Kickstarter.
About whatever else that's...
I'm also going to talk about some other Kickstarters I think have been pretty fascinating.
All right. We'll do a whole Kickstarter section
You can't run a Kickstarter and not be on the flag. So.
And Jeremy, of course, I believe you wanted to talk news, right?
We've got a lot
of news.
Yeah, I'll talk about some news.
All right, so let's go ahead and kick this off with Nathan. He's the one I wrote down first, so we'll kick that off.
What we're into.
Well, I'm going to talk about a little bit about what I've been into lately. As a lot of people know by now, there's been a massive resurgence of older style games being crowdfunded on Kickstarter. It started off with Double Fine Adventures, which was Tim Schafer and Ron Gilbert, who are best well known for the Secret of Monkey Island series and Grim Fandango, as well as Day of the Tentacle. we talked about this actually in the last episode that they were doing a Kickstarter, and it was reaching massive amounts of money.
Oh yeah.
And it was for a little while it was the highest grossing Kickstarter ever done at like $3.3 million, that they were just recently built out by a cool little smartwatch. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Yeah.
Mm. But that, yeah, that's an interesting.
Hey,
one.
The people at Kickstarter are rolling in money now.
Yeah, yeah, they're yeah. It's they're
they get 5% of everything.
Yeah. The Kickstarter went from being something that was a cool idea with some great implementation and some unique planning to becoming something that's actually becoming a very viable way to get a lot of things done. And what happened was is Tim Schafer and Ron Gilbert, when they go to the conventions and talk to the various different people they know in the industry, were telling people who were having trouble getting games done, getting games released, hey, try this Kickstarter, it might help. And from that, we've had some incredible stuff come around, such as Brian Fargo, who is the creator of Bard's Tale, the original Bard's Tale, including the one that you like, Jeremy, the more recent one, the funny one.
Mm-hmm.
He created a game in the 80s called Wasteland. And so he's always wanted to make Wasteland 2, and watching his promotion video on Kickstarter is funny because he actually mentions on his website that a lot of that stuff that those people mentioned to him that were supposed to be producers is the type of crap that he's gotten from publishers trying to get the game done. We're thinking of re-envisioning it as a first-person shooter.
What?
Let's see. The crowd says, or the consensus of our focus groups say that Red is really hot this year. How about he has red boots? Are you seeing red? I'm seeing red. Just stupid stuff. People, they just don't understand or they don't know what the original product is, and they're like, well, it won't ever sell, so we're not going to back it. Or you have like in Leisure Suit Larry's case, where they went to go get funding for it, and the company, the major funding company, is like, we like you, we like your company, we think it's great. But we refuse to support Leisure Suit Larry because we do not want to tarnish our good name. Yeah, Leisure Suit Larry, which is about as bad as Benny Hill. Benny Hill, the comedy show was kind of somewhat sexy. There's not a whole lot of nudity in either one of them. But, because of the whole, the quest for sex, the game obviously is horribly, terribly bad. Mm-hmm. But Wasteland 2, Brian Froger was the next person I know of that popped up one. On Kickstarter, and it is now successfully backed. He wanted $900,000, which was more than Double Fine, but Double Fine was doing an iPad game with two people doing it, whereas he's doing a PC game.
Mm-hmm.
And his goal was $900,000. They hit $2.9 million. So yeah, Wasteland 2 will be coming out next October.
Yay!
Yes, finally. For those of us who have been waiting since we played it on the Commodore 64 when we were like 6 years old. Yeah, it's finally coming out.
You're familiar with The Wasteland?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome game. And then it was followed up. The next one I noticed on here was from a company called Harebrained Schemes, run by anybody who knows him, Jordan Weissman. That name probably tickles the back of a lot of people's brains because Jordan Weissman was the original creator of Shadowrun for Fast. And he licensed back his game system to make a role-playing computer game based on Shadowrun.
I thought it was a tactical war game, isn't it?
As far as I know, it's based on the role-playing system. It's based on the role-playing game system, and it's going to use the actual role-playing game system stats and stuff, which means it will be a tactical RPG.
Got it.
Doing runs and stuff.
Will it take 32 years to make a character?
God, I hope not.
First CantCon, he ran Shadowrun.
It took me two weeks to do five characters.
And he had to make characters. And Hero Lab does Shadowrun now, but it didn't back then, so he had to make characters for it.
By hand, with the point system and stuff. And
fun
I'd
game!
Never done it
before. Mickey, yeah.
Yeah.
So they put out the Hero Lab for it. It was like, finally, I can make a character for Shadowrun in less than an hour.
Ran through with the Hero Lab, I can do it in 30 minutes. But, So he licensed his own product, which is kind of seems stupid to me that he has to license what he created. But it's successful. It's got 28 hours to go, so by the time this comes out, it'll be done. Right now, it's setting at about 1.6 million. If they can hit 1.75, they're going to actually create an additional quest that'll be exclusive to the backers for now, and it'll become available to everyone else later. That'll tie the Sega Genesis Shadowrun game and the Super NES Shadowrun game together.
Into
the background.
Did you wake up in the morgue?
Yes, on the Super NES version. And in the Sega Genesis version, you were looking for your brother who disappeared. I love both of those games. I have them both over there on the shelf.
Because after we're done with the show, you two can wander about and oogle the old games he's got.
Stuff, yeah.
You two will connect on a fundamental level.
Yeah, and I will. Yes.
But that was followed up quickly by Allo and replay retro replay no replay games, which is pretty much is a large company. Well, not a large company. It's a company out of Austin, Texas that consists of a large number of people who used to work for Sierra Online,
nice.
Including Josh Mandel, Allo. The owner, Paul Trow, it used to be a beta tester, and they've actually hit their goal as of Monday. They needed $500,000. They're remaking Leisure Suit Larry 1. The problem, there's been a lot of controversy over it because people have been like, well, why don't you make Larry 8? Larry 8's going to cost a lot more than $500,000, one. Two, the rights of Leisure Suit Larry are currently owned by...
Activision.
No. Activision licensed it to someone else. Codemasters. Codemasters owns it. When they licensed out Leisure Suit Larry, Replay Games did, they were only allowed to license the remaking of the original series, which is the original six. If they can do good with the original six, there's been discussions that if they do well with the sales of the original six, they'll be allowed to make Leisure Suit Larry 8 Lust in Space, which was the name of the game. So far, the preliminary one-room thing that they did looks incredible. If that's what the whole game's going to look like, I'm excited. I love Leisure Suit Larry. Don't get me wrong. It was a great game. But what came from this was even more exciting for me because Jane Jensen announced shortly afterwards that she was trying to help back her Pinkerton Road studio to create, basically do like a couple games a year. Like adventure games. And so Jane Jensen, who is known for Gabriel Knight, also helped write King's Quest VI, which a lot of people herald as one of the best King's Quest games that was ever made. She's doing that. And then, out of the shadows, it's kind of impressive. The people at Replay Studios are talking to the people who used to work at Sierra, a lot of them. A lot of these people know each other. And there's a lot of... We'd love to talk about, you know, Roberta Williams and Kim Williams, but we can't. You know, we'd like to say that, you know, we can talk about, we've been talking to them, we can tell you we've been talking to them, but we can't say anything about it, which leads a lot of people to hoping that maybe it means that Roberta Williams and Kim Williams are going to come back out and say something. We'd love to talk about Scott Murphy and Mark Crow, but we can't. Well, they said that, and then Scott Murphy and Mark Crow brought up their website called guysfromandromeda.com and announced that they're doing a new game. They could not license their own game, Space Quest. These are Scott Murphy and Mark Crow created Space Quest, which, let's face it, aside from King's Quest, is one of the most well-known adventure games ever made.
I played all six of them.
Yeah. Because more it's games. Just, he has, Roger Wilco is that hapless idiot, bumbling idiot, that if it wasn't for the person behind the keyboard, wouldn't make it off the ship in the first game.
So what is it they're
that's
calling
actually
it?
It's called Space Venture.
Ah.
Go to guys, it's called guysfromandromeda.com. They're having Gary Owens, the guy that was the announcer in Space Quest 4 and Space Quest 6, you know, the meanwhile, back at the Justice League, he's doing the announce, the commenter for Space Venture. There's a couple of pictures of artwork up. They're actually hiring, but from what I understand, they're actually not going the Kickstarter route. They've actually got funding, but that's exciting. A lot of the people that got out of gaming, I don't know if you guys know her. Her name is Rebecca Heineman. Originally was known as Robert or Bill Heineman, who helped work on Bard's Tale 2 and Bard's Tale 3 and did Dragon Wars. There's discussions that she's going to try to work with the guy who created Bard's Tale and make a Bard's Tale 4.
Nice.
I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that Kickstarter has managed to dredge up. These games that people have wanted that big companies are going, no one's ever going to buy that game. And they're finding out that it's like Wasteland 2. Wasteland 2, he's been trying to get, Brian Fargo, the creator of Wasteland 2, has been trying to get that game published for like the last 15 years, and nobody would do it. And he hit his goal in 36 hours for $900,000. Shadowrun Returns, they hit their goal in 28 hours. They needed 400,000. They hit it in 28 hours or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's interesting how it's essentially the Double Fine thing pretty much opened the floodgate.
Well, yeah, the thing is you had, if you look at the comments on, like, Double Fine, people were like, wow, this is awesome, a new point-and-click adventure game. We'd sure like to see some of the people who actually pioneered this stuff come back and do something. They're still around.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like, yeah, hey, why aren't we doing anything?
Hey, they just made $2 million.
With $2 million, we could make a really good game.
And like we were saying when we were talking about it last time, is it cuts out the publishers, and it's a really... it's a fascinating way. It's a fascinating business method now,
it's a viable
I think we're gonna get some really cool stuff out of it. I mean, obviously, it does, like I said, it's not gonna work for games like Call of Duty, whatever. I mean, those are multi-million dollar
games. Right. They're also multi-million dollar.
But
earners.
I mean, they make bazillions of dollars, and you know, EA can put that out as in 12 different versions as much as they want, but yeah. You know, this is a very good way to something like that. So.
Well, these are specific. They're what's classified as niche genre games. I mean, mm-hmm. Tactical combat role playing games like mm-hmm. Wasteland or Shadowrun are not going to appeal to a huge 80% of the market. But the thing is they have a very devoted core.
Right.
And that very devoted core, every person that's in that core more than likely is going to pick this game up. If they're if not, it's because they haven't heard of it. I mean, I haven't pledged anything. I'm waiting until they come out. Now that they've actually met their goals, I'm waiting for them to come out. I'm going to pay the retail price for them to help support the company. The only one that I really wish I could support is Leisure Suit Larry, because I'd love to do the $100 version, their $100 pledge, because it gives you a big box that sits on the shelf with a physical copy of the game, a physical copy of the art book, and the soundtrack. And I would love it to set it on the shelf right next to the rest of my Leisure Suit Larry games. But aside from that, everything else, I'll wait till it comes out, and then I'll purchase it retail so that I can support the company. Because if this works well, I mean, we can see stuff that, there's a lot of us out there. The thing is a lot of the computer gamers and video gamers that played video games when we were younger, we didn't just die off. We didn't just go away. We didn't just get up one day and go, I just want to play first-person shooters from here on out. We're still here, and we're all going, boy, it'd really be nice to play something other than a first-person shooter or a click-the-mouse-button-as-fast-as-I-can role-playing game to hack and slash stuff. I'd like to actually do something that has a little bit of tactics in it. And, Star Wars, Old Republic's not cutting it. I'm tired of MMOs and stuff. Then stuff like this comes along. When was the last time we had a thinking man RPG where you actually stopped when you went into combat, looked at the layout of the combat, decided, what tactic you were going to use, and then recalibrated your tactics based on when the computer moved? I think the last game that really did that well was Return to the Temple of Elements of Evil, or whatever that one. Return to the
which the, one? The
Return to Temple of the Elements of Elements of Evil.
The PC one?
Yeah.
It was just Temple of Elements of Evil.
Yeah. That came out in 2002?
Something like that.
Yeah, I thought it was later than that.
It was
the last hurrah of Troika games. I remember that much.
And it was buggy as hell.
It was buggy as hell, but the thing was, it was a great game. And if you get the fan-made patch, which fixed it because Troika went under,
right.
You get the fan-made patch, it works great. I mean, mm-hmm. It's a good game. No, the one that was really bad was Pools of Radiance Return to the Drainer.
Well, now, I'll mention it. We'll get into it in the news thing. We'll talk about it later.
But
cool. There's a couple things that you bring up that are interesting. I mean, first of all, the thing I like about Kickstarter is mm-hmm. just it's giving the creators the ability to actually retain the rights to their mm-hmm. IP. So the guys who are doing Space Venture,
Mark Crow and Scott Murphy.
Right, they'll get to keep that forever, so that they can take that. They can have a company. They don't have to rely on a publisher. I'm wondering what it's going to do though. The next time these guys want to do a game, are they going to kickstart it, or will they have a war chest so they don't need to?
Well, a lot of them are hoping that what will happen is the sales will be decent enough that they'll have enough money that if they need to do Kickstarter, I mean, Jordan Weissman from Harebrained Games talks about it in one of his updates. He says our goal is to make a little bit of money from this. So we have enough. The vast majority of the cost of this game up front is going to be to create the actual system and the engine to run it, and then the rest will be done on everything. And it says after that, we continue to use the same system for a little while and update and create additional things, which will reduce cost. Hopefully, we'll sell enough to be able to do that without going to Kickstarter. If we do, it'll be a significant reduced cost. Like Leisure Suit Larry, the remake of 1, is $500,000. Well, they've got to build the entire engine from scratch using Unity. They're using Unity 3.
Are they really? Okay.
Yeah, so it's multi-platform. It'll work on the, the iPhone, the iPad, and Mac, and PC.
Yep.
But the goal is that once the engine is built, it's like how Sierra did it. Sierra had the Adventure Game Interpreter and then the Sierra Creative Interpreter. It was a basic engine that got updated, and they built the games inside of it. So if their engine was built, and they spent a chunk of money on the engine, and then they could put all the products into it, which increased the speed at which the games were able to be built and reduced the overall cost. And yet, that's what they're looking to do with a lot of these systems, these Kickstarters. And the thing is if the first if their first product is a roaring success, it gets great reviews by the people who are really interested in it, they're going to tell more people, which means that it's more likely for a better selling product than the second one, or the second thing. But who knows? I mean, Space Venture, I'm kind of sad that Scott Murphy and Mark Crow couldn't get Space Quest back. But as we know, Activision is a bunch of smurf and pieces of smurf. Sorry, I don't like Activision.
Take your medication.
I don't like Activision at all, and they showcase how bad they are with the fact that they took a company that had 240 people when the company before Vivendi Universal was called Cendant Software. When Cendant Software took over Sierra, Sierra had 240 people on the payroll. When Activision took it over, they had like 120. 2 years after that, so 5 year span from when Cendant took it over in 1997 to 2002, 5 years, 240 people. 5 years later, two. That's how badly mismanaged Activision did with that IP. They had all these titles of games that could have been used to increase their money, because that's all Activision is, a greedy bastards. And they just ran it into the ground and crushed it. And, you know, it was bad enough that the owners of Sierra got ousted in a hostile takeover in the first place by a company that did it illegally because they actually didn't have the money that they said they did. They lied. But then to have it go to Vivendi Universal Games, which was badly mismanaged by Vivendi, who then sold out and then got bought out by Activision, and Activision just pretty much Smurf canned everything. Yeah, it's a disaster. So.
All right, and apparently you've read a book.
Yes, I have.
And it has words in it and not just pictures.
Yes,
right?
I actually I managed. My wife and I went up to Omaha for our anniversary. And
congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. 5 years. She hasn't killed me yet. It's amazing.
Nice.
we actually managed to find this really cool old bookstore. They had books that were literally hundreds of years old on these shelves that went up like 30 feet.
Sweet.
Like you see in all those movies that you never that don't exist around here. Yeah.
To have an old man chase you out, and then you came back and stole the Neverending Story and Dragon Quest.
No, I did see a copy of a first run copy of Treasure Island.
Wow.
From 18 something, and you know the one it was like in a vacuum sealed box on the shelf. It was like $10,000, and I was like, you know, if I had $10,000, I could probably buy that. There's like maybe
world of
50
disposable income.
Yes.
I wish we remembered some of it.
Yes.
Robert's like, $10,000.
Drop on the bucket. But
I'll just throw it in my Bugatti Veyron. Yeah.
But we went to the back and they had a bunch of old paperbacks. They were cheap paperbacks, you know, a bunch of sci-fi paperbacks. And they had the Stainless Steel Rat Wants You, but the cover was ripped, so I didn't buy it. But sitting, like, tucked under a bunch of books was a book that stood out. I'd heard the name before, and I always wanted to read it, and I'd read bits and pieces of it, but not the whole thing. There was a book by Clive Barker called The Hellbound Heart. And the reason why I knew about it was because, as Ethan can attest to, I really like Hellraiser, the first one. Second one's okay, third one, just watch the first one. Well, the first movie, Hellraiser, is based off The Hellbound Heart. And the book is actually very interesting. There's enough differences to keep you guessing how the book's going to go. I mean, if you've seen the movie, you have a rough idea what the book's about. But the book is actually very well done, and it's kind of a shame to think that the movie didn't actually touch on the kind of horror or the creeping, you know, that creeping dismay that's in the book. That's very well done in the book. It's a very short. It's a novella. It's maybe 200 pages. Nothing major. But it was well worth the read, and if you guys can find a copy or if it's available on an ebook format, I'd highly recommend checking it out because it is actually a really well done book. I mean, it does have a good element of horror to it, and I'm not someone who scares easy, but it's good and creepy and gives you that little shiver up the spine. Also managed to pick up a bunch of other books. We got to see a copy of first edition print of Clan of the Cave Bear. Yeah, only $600. I probably would have got that for my wife if I had the money because she loves that series. But it's a good book. I'd highly recommend people check it out. If you can find a copy of it, pick it up, read it. It's well worth a read. It's different enough to not, if you know the movie, you're not going to know exactly what's going to happen. But it's also similar enough that you have a rough idea what's going on without having the background. So check it out. I'm done. Yeah.
All right, Hellbound Heart.
Yes.
It is still available in paperback.
Awesome.
But I don't see an ebook version of it on here. Oh, nope. There's a Kindle edition on Amazon. It's $9. It's available.
The ebook version is as expensive as the actual physical published version.
Yes, well, the physical published version is $9.59.
Well, why the hell would you buy an electronic version that's more expensive than the actual book?
I know. They're in an antitrust lawsuit about it now.
Well, not Amazon. Apple is, because Apple's the one that did that.
Amazon did it too.
Yeah, all the big publishers.
This just in the news.
All right, so some news that most people have probably heard if they've been following any of the 5e news.
Which I don't, because I didn't like 4 then.
Well, you should follow 5e, because it's not 4e.
It is.
But it's not.
But it is.
But it's not.
But it is. It's everything you can learn from a game.
Ultimately, we have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
Right. So, two things. One, Monty Cook is no longer part of the design team.
Yes.
Nope. He's no longer the lead of the design team. He's no longer part of WotC.
Yes.
And as he indicated, he was having differences with the company. Now, in his first blog, he only mentioned certain people on the design team that he was very, happy to work with. But later on in his blog, he did indicate that just because he didn't mention other people doesn't mean that he had problems with them. Now, obviously, the forums exploded.
Oh, yeah.
In insanity. Most of
the nerd rage paranoia turned it up to 11. It was already simmering at about a 7.
Yeah. But some of it was... There were a few, shall we say, almost personal attacks, which I don't understand. They have no place at all.
Let me read Monty's first blog post for the group. It's really a short one. Last week I decided that I would leave my contract position with Wizards of the Coast. I am no longer working on Dungeons and Dragons, although I may provide occasional consultation in the future. My decision is one based on differences of opinion with the company. However, I want to take this time to stress that my differences are not with my fellow designers Rob Schwalb and Bruce Cordell. I enjoyed every moment of working with them over the past year. I have faith that they'll create a fun game, and I'm rooting for them. Due to my non-disclosure agreement, as well as a desire to keep things on a professional level, I have no intention of going into further detail at this time. Mostly, I just hate drama and would rather talk about more interesting things. As for what I'll be turning to next, I hope you'll stay tuned. I plan on having an interesting announcement in that regard in the near future.
Yeah, he didn't say that he was going to be working on Mecha, but no. Heroic Journey's actually we not hired him. But
we don't have any exclusives there, no.
Darn it.
He did follow up that just because he left some people out of that, it doesn't mean he didn't, he didn't like them. And, I mean, being under the NDA, he can't say anything. And, I mean, Hasbro could sue the hell out of him if he started mouthing off. And not to mention... He may really want a game to be created that does well. He just didn't want the corporate brass, as has been mentioned, to start messing around with things.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, it's all conjecture as to what happened.
Everything's conjecture, yeah. But, I mean, it does, no matter what you think of Monty's work, he's both done, and this is my opinion only, he's both done good and bad things.
Was good.
Ghostwalk was not.
He has interesting ideas, and sometimes you need to have someone with just ideas, whether they're good or bad. That's why you have other people on a design team.
Yeah.
But either way, when a lead designer leaves for whatever reason, it makes people nervous, especially in such a big thing as this when they've opened it up so much.
Yeah, and people were already really, really nervous about 5th edition anyway before this happened. So.
Well, they keep trying to keep it from becoming a edition war, and on the forum you can really see that. There still is the back and forth, and I do understand that. We all have our likes and dislikes. Some of us are saner than others. obviously, the forum, jumping into the forums is a new thing for me, so some of my shock and such, you know, over the past year or however, 6 months, however it's been, you know, this is all new to me because I don't follow forums.
Yeah.
I just don't. But I've been following this forum quite a bit. So I can understand, and I can kind of see, you know, the different people that are both sane, not sane, just on there for fun, and so on. I mean, a lot of people just want to have a fun game, and are truly worried about it. I mean, a lot of people have grown up with this game, and, you know, they don't want crap. And at the same time, some of them are just nuts. Either way, Monty Cook is no longer part of it, and we'll see if he has anything to do with it in the future. Whether that really affects 5e or not, who knows? Everything's conjecture. I don't know if they'll find somebody to replace him or not. Unfortunately, it looked like some of the hardcore 4E fans were celebrating this, but at the same time, you know, other individuals were just saying, you know, it really shouldn't affect anything. Why should it?
We can hope that it doesn't affect anything. I mean, there's no guarantee that it won't.
Well, you know it will. I mean, the game with Monty Cook versus the game without Monty Cook will be different. Better or worse, we'll never know, but Monty Cook would have brought something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the hope is the good things that he brought to it are still going to be in there. Now, in addition to that news, what was mentioned at the same time that they posted that was the playtest date. This is the public playtest, and the public playtest is May 24th. We'll see if they can keep that date. Obviously, nothing has been released yet as of this recording. And I've been watching it like a hawk. Nothing has been released on how they're going to do this, though they have mentioned things like you can play it at home, you'll be able to play it with your groups, and so on. So, I mean, just assumptions, it's probably going to be a download process. And if you go back to PAX East, they said they were only about 20% done. But they also indicated, and this was Mike Merles who said this, they were 20% done or so. Now, he also indicated, and I love how people only listen to what they want to listen to, but he also said once they get that 20%, you know, once they get past that little 20% there, they're going to be able to go pretty quick. Also, we don't actually know what that 20% entails. Is that the basic core stuff?
Grappling rules.
Yes. It'd be the grappling rules. Who knows? What we get in this particular playtest is could be that 20%, could be 30%. I mean, what did these people's, I mean, their job is to do this 8 hours a day, every day. I mean, that's what they do.
Honestly, I'm pretty sure they're working more than 8 hours a day, but
yeah. Oh, well, you know, you understand what I mean, though.
Yeah.
I mean, this is their job. This is their day-to-day job. They get paid to do this. So it's not like they're just sitting there and that 20% just stayed at PAX East and they didn't get anywhere. Actually, the playtest, being this early, actually does not bother me. It actually makes me happy if this is a beta or an alpha. And I'm hoping that feedback from the playtest is taken into account. And I'm going to be curious that once, if the public playtest comes out, I'm curious if that means NDAs from the other playtesters are then null and void, because I'm going to want to know if, you know, I'm going to have questions for people that played in the other playtest, you know, how is this different? You know, things like that, just for curiosity more so. So, you know, Monty Cook going away, that makes me a little bit nervous, not like the sky is falling nervous, but it makes me a little bit nervous, still being optimistic at this point, because some of the stuff I've seen and read looks positive. Not to mention, I can always go back to Osric, 3rd edition, 2nd edition. I can also take any ideas that I've seen on the forums and steal them. None of them are in any rule sets. And come up with my own house rules. But
I think ultimately, as we keep pointing out in this, is that we're living in a time where you can play any edition of D&D you want now.
Yeah.
All editions are pretty much actively supported at this point.
Pretty much. By somebody.
And we're talking actively. There's stuff coming out.
Sure.
And that's the sad thing kind of about this forum is you do have you can tell that there are a lot of really, really good fans.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, you then have this corporation, whether it's Hasbro or WotC, and while they are there to make money, they just don't care about the fans. I mean, they do because they need the money, but either way, we've got a playtest coming up May 24th. Mm-hmm. I will be downloading it.
Yeah.
And I will be running it and playing in it. So that's the big news that I've been watching.
Yeah. If I can add to what you're saying, I don't know how much I can say from the NDA, but I can tell you that having signed one and received a playtest copy, I am fairly impressed with the work that's been done. I also was not in any way surprised to hear that someone from the design team had decided to leave. My biggest fear with D&D Next.
I wish they would stop calling it that. That's just a stupid name.
So with D&D 5 is
like, it's 5th edition, guys. Yeah. Just come on.
But Next sounds so Pepsi-ish, you know. It's
D&D Next. It'll be D&D Crystal.
Yes.
Don't call it Crystal. Don't call it Light
in the new D&D.
Yes. But with their goals of not doing edition wars, and we're going to have some of them for everyone, and we're going to make everyone happy, that's impossible.
It's an unrealistic goal.
Yeah, and so I'm not surprised that there wasn't some level of fallout. And I'm sorry it's Monty.
That sucks. But, Monty's a great guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a good person in general, but he's also a great designer.
And Tolis was...
However you want to pronounce it. Yeah. It's awesome.
Tolis, like we say in the hood.
Yeah, Tolis is awesome.
Yeah. Tolis is freaking sweet.
Yeah,
I love Tolis.
And so anytime Monty Cook is involved in something, I'm immediately interested.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that the other guys on the team have that same cachet.
They actually do, if you think about it.
No, but I mean...
Not the level of Monty Cook.
I mean,
Monty has a certain... Mm-hmm. There's just something about him. Again, yes. Mm-hmm. I don't like everything he's done.
Yeah.
But that's okay. again, I have to agree with, it was one of the forum people said that, or a blog I was reading, I don't know, it doesn't really matter, but one of them indicated, you know, he's an idea person.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have an idea person. That doesn't mean the ideas are good. They're not always going to be good. That's not the point. You have a team of people, and the idea person starts to generate those ideas, and the other people then go, yes, no, or let's see what we can do with those. And a lot of the stuff he's done, it isn't necessarily what we thought it should have been.
Sure.
But it was creative.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
So,
yeah.
I am optimistic, cautiously optimistic. I don't think the world's going to burn down.
And one thing we also like to point out here is we talked about the active support of the old editions and whatnot, and contrary to what people might think, WotC, as with 4th edition, Wizards of the Coast is not going to send a guy to your house and make sure that if you're playing D&D, you're playing 4th edition. There are no WotC police.
Didn't know that there are.
There are.
Let's not talk about that.
No. It's part of the NDA. Right.
Yeah. Well, so far the WotC police have not come to my home when I've played Osric.
Yes.
Yeah, just, when you're playing Osric, don't answer the door.
Yes.
Okay.
Running with those strange people where we're wandering around.
But no, I think the biggest thing I'm upset about is I'm sure this will make money come up with something ginormous and expensive.
Yeah.
So then I'll have to pay for D&D books and Monty's new thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, what bothered me was one line on his actual blog, and somebody said, the same day that he put this out, somebody said, Pathfinder must have offered you more money. And out of all the comments, everything, that particular comment, for some reason, just pissed me off. I don't know why. There's just something about it.
There's a huge misconception that the people at Paizo and the people at WotC are mortal enemies. Like, if they see each other on the street, swords are drawn, and there is bloodshed. It's like, no, these guys hang out. They play games together. They're friends, for crying out loud.
And the Paizo secret police are much nicer.
Yes, WotC secret they'll police. At least say please.
Exactly. Before throwing your books in the fire.
But I mean, it's a huge thing for fourth edition, the third and the fourth edition people who just the Pathfinder and the fourth edition people who just like go at each other all the time. But the thing is, if you go and talk to the Pathfinder guys, go talk to the WotC, directly to the WotC guys, they're standing back watching this going, why are you guys just play the game? I don't care.
And you know what? Some of us actually play both Pathfinder and 4th edition.
Exactly. You got WotC guys who play Pathfinder guys who play 4th edition.
No.
But, yeah, I still have my 4E books. Yeah. I have my core 3rd edition books. I unfortunately don't have my giant collection of 2E, sadly.
Yeah.
But I have my Osric. I have all... You have all of my Birthright collection.
Oh, nice.
I drool over it.
And you've got your Thunder Rift stuff.
I have my Thunder Rift stuff. Someday I hope to own that, but that will probably never happen. But
it's a good dream. Cling to that dream.
No. Never.
But they are. Since we're talking news, I want to quickly mention this. Now I think it was you who told me that. I don't remember, but you guys have heard about the re-release, the enhanced edition of Baldur's Gate, right?
Yes. I'm not impressed, unfortunately.
And it's coming out for I think so far they've announced it for the iPad and for Mac OS X.
I can't wait.
As well as the PC.
Yeah, I would assume it's the PC as well. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I've actually seen some screenshots, and the reason why I'm not impressed is they're expecting you to pay full price as it stands right now for the PC version, and it's not that much more enhanced than the original version, graphics-wise, and they've completely changed the system that you use for the rule system. If I want Baldur's Gate enhanced, I want Baldur's Gate enhanced. I mean, I want the rule system that I played the original with. I want the same story. I don't want them to be changing anything to make it more fresh, more hip, bullshit like that, because that's exactly what they're talking about. With an engine that's not enhanced in any way, shape, or form. It's just updated so it'll run on Windows 7.
And I'm really looking forward to that iOS version. That's why I'm the most excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it should be, the engine should be more enhanced.
And we mentioned Hero Lab earlier in the show. Hero Lab just put out their Mac version.
Nice.
Finally.
They have a Mac version out, which means also they, if you look on their forums, they are talking about it. They are working on it. They are working on like an iPad version and whatnot, which would be awesome.
Yeah.
But any kind of portable version of that would be wonderful. But they just released the Mac version of Hero Lab.
Very nice.
So
yeah, I'm not a Mac guy. I'm just an Apple guy.
For Mac lovers out there who've been frothing at the mouth for Hero Lab, Hero Lab's a great tool. I love it.
Well, you can understand why it's for Mizzen Mastermind so. All the time. I mean, the worldwide market that Apple commands of computers is about 11.5%.
Yeah.
So you're going to go from the 88%.
And it's pretty much opposite when it comes to tablet. Tablet world, everyone's got a freaking iPad. So.
Well, yeah, everyone's got an iPad because that was all that was available for the longest time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't.
And they're good.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They are good.
But
the problem is their pricing is a little wonky sometimes.
Well, they can afford to price it then.
But they also don't.
People will pay it. Because people will pay it.
Apple makes most of the money off of their name.
In the case of the iPad, it is a much better put together piece of technology than any other tablet I've seen.
I will agree. But that being said,
I might have one by this time. Rumor has it I'm getting one for graduation.
Well, congratulations. Yeah. It's not a bad tablet. It's a good tablet. The problem is it runs on the same thing. That one I got for a great price. On top of that, someone paid for part of it because of a bunch of work I did for it. And I could have gotten with an iPad too. Thing was, is that that pad right there, that tablet right there, has all the same specs as the entry level tablet. It cost me $200 less than my iPad. And the thing is, it does everything I need to. But the problem I have with it is it's a great tablet. I mean, you played with it, but it's got a bunch of wonderful stuff on it. But the thing is aside from some touch based games and some neat little MIDI tools that I have on it, what do you use it
for? It's a fancy Kindle Fire.
Yeah. That's exactly what it's a fancy color ebook.
And that's actually, everybody that has a Kindle Fire that I know really likes it.
See, the thing is, I don't like having to hold the bloody thing to watch a movie. I mean, yeah, I can watch movies on it, and the screen is beautiful for watching movies. That does high def.
Yes.
It's 720p on the screen. But hold that thing for 2.5 hours while watching it.
No, I rested on some pillows.
Yeah, I'd want a stand. The thing is where they get you on a lot of the stuff
is the accessories.
The tablet's expensive enough. You know, that was expensive. His iPad will be expensive. But then it's like, well, I want to stand. Like that magnetic thing, right?
Mm-hmm. There are some cool peripherals out there for it, but it's expensive as hell for it.
Yeah, I paid $80 for a
did we lose Jeremy?
Keyboard. No?
No, I'm still here.
That was me.
Oh, okay.
He's making music with his mic.
Yeah. But
definitely.
I'm happy with my tablet. The iPad is seriously the best tablet out on the market. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But
I would just be glad for them to put out a Hero Lab for it. Would be great.
But
the Mac OS X one is a step in the right direction. Well, we're all big fans of Hero Lab here. So.
Yeah, considering OS 10 Lion is pretty much starting that path down being iOS on a desktop.
Sure.
It's only a matter of like they're saying probably 4 revisions before you'll be using the same operating system on your Mac desktop as what you use on your iPad, which is causing a massive fallout with the Macintosh.
That's really all that I mean. That's all that's sort of been bubbling around news wise that I've has caught my attention. So yeah.
I would like to see a tablet version of Hero Lab. I know they'll do iOS first, but eventually if they do an Android one, I will buy another one specifically for Android because that is like the perfect size to flip, pull it like this, and do all your stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear something kind of random but technology based?
Sure, go ahead.
So I found an app for Osric for my phone.
Nice.
For my Android phone. It's old school RPG tables. It's really a first edition / Osric one. And what's awesome is it has all the tables and everything on it. And I was like, somebody actually went out and created this thing. And it's been updated, and I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, that's
gem, treasure.
That's really, really trivial to do in iOS programming. So.
Yes, but see,
don't know how to do it. So therefore, it is awesome.
I'm taking it, you're a programmer.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and no, it's still awesome, but it's still easy to do.
Because everything was all like this advanced crap and like for Cori and everything, and I found this, and I'm like, I love you.
The Shameless Plug.
Right, I've got a bit of a shameless plug to get into, as I am prone to do. If you, I would cruise over to RPG Now and look at it, but their server is down for maintenance. I've actually put out, started releasing, and I intend to start releasing more of them as I've been sort of developing various ones. But superpowered dossiers for under the Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition open license. I've reformatted and re-released the Justice City Regulars, Cerberus, Blue Streak, Eclipse, and Crimson Bolt in individual files, much more akin to the threat reports that Green Ronin was putting out. I intend to, I've got a couple more in the pipeline, just working on finding and tracking down various art for them and whatnot, and writing up some backstory to put in there. If you want to support Gamershaven and really more support me, go to the website through our affiliate link and check them out. They're about $1 each. So
I will also shamelessly plug my own work because I have a Kickstarter out on Kickstarter.com. It is for the second published mecha setting. This one is called Combiners. So if you ever want to get your Voltron on with the mecha role-playing game, Combiners is the way to do that.
You form the body, I'll form the head.
Yay, head. Oh, wait a minute. Edit that out.
Whoa.
There's a terrible double pun on.
This is not a porn cast. It's a podcast. I'm going to have to tell you people.
Boy, was that false advertising. Anyway, all right. So if you don't know, Mecha is the game I developed about giant anime fighting robots. It is very fast, especially for combat that you would find in most mecha games, with all sorts of role-playing goodness thrown in. But the question I was always asked was, where are the Voltron rules? Where are the Voltron rules? So fine, the Voltron rules are on Kickstarter.
There you go.
Yeah, so
if you want the Voltron rules, you got to pay for them, man.
You get to back. You don't gotta pay. You get to back my project.
I thought this was kind of like a racketeering, where you know, forcing people to pay to no.
No, I am sending people to
okay.
Tufts to people's houses. Nice. And forcing them. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I assumed
cool.
You got your visit because I know it's huge back.
Was that was that the guy that showed up at my door demanding money from me?
Yes.
Oh. Wait. Don't look in the basement.
Damn.
He showed up at my
dogs.
He showed up at my door and said, if you don't back this, I'm going to break your legs. I was like, oh, I was going to back it anyway. Like, oh.
Yeah. It was, well, I was.
Is there a Quick Trip around here?
Do you know where? No. In your neighbor's play games. No. So, yeah, it's. I guess as of the 27th of April. We're about 71%, 72% funded. We decided
72%.
Yep, and
well,
so,
on your way.
Yeah, which is like humbling and awesome, and I can't believe it. And just the stretch goals we have for it are basically every $1,000, we're going to release a new mecha game out to the backers.
Supplement, yeah.
So the first one will be Mecha Mercenaries for people who've read about that either on the Heroic Journey blog or on RPGNet. And after that, it's backer's choice. So we will do a democratic poll and figure out what game we're going to do next. So everyone, please go out to Kickstarter, search for Combiners RPG. You'll find me.
We'll put a link to it on the site.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, great.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently somebody who lives near me in Lenexa is a music composer and is going to do a music score for Combiners.
Nice.
Yeah. So, sweet. Yeah, I know. I'm pretty excited. And also, if you're interested in Mecha, you can buy it off the Kickstarter for a reduced price. You can go to RPG Now. Or you'll be able to find it very soon on sellstyle.com.
Thank you.
We are back. We're just doing some random encounters, and random encounters are just go over some emails and this little random stuff that pops in, and we just close out the show, essentially. We've got three new markers on our minion map.
Awesome.
We've got Tony in Connecticut. So, hi, Tony. Why aren't there more gamers? He says. Apparently, there really aren't many. Well, Tony, the closest one to you on our minion map is actually Noah over in New Jersey. So, take the train.
Yeah. Us in the Midwest, we think those are right next to each other.
Yes.
It's only like an inch apart.
The next one we have actually is Ravenblood, who is out in Ohio. Actually looks to be in the Columbus area, not too terribly far from, of course, Tracy, our good friend. And of course, Tyler, who's out in, Western Ohio, so you're surrounded there. And then we've got Jesse, who is out in Kentucky, so a little bit farther out there.
Hello, Jesse.
Yes, hello, Jesse.
Hello.
Hello. And the fun thing here, we picked up, I don't remember if I mentioned it last time, but we now have three people on our minion map who are outside of the United States, or outside of the of North America, I should say. We've got one listener in, we've got Car Hacks in Sweden, we've got Marlon in Poland, and here we go. And then we've got Peter in Germany. So,
what about the gentleman in South Africa?
He has not put a pin in.
Oh, I'm sad. I do know we have someone who listens to us in South Africa.
Yes. Then I got an email from Rusty. Rusty just asking a question about CantCon. Says, CantCon a good way to learn about different games? Do you have to play at CantCon? Can you just watch and learn? I don't know anybody that plays any kind of game. I guess I'm just looking for help on figuring out how to get into gaming.
Well, the best way to learn how to play a game is to sit down and play it.
Yeah. Short answer, Rusty, is, you know, come on down to CanCon. We've got tons of stuff running. Pretty much all of it is geared towards newbies, or easily yeah. towards people
new players
who are new into it. You're welcome to come in and look around. There is the whole admission to get in thing, which kind of might be a little off-putting, but the Gamers Haven Library is going to be there. There's going to be enough people there that are just throwing down pickup games, and it's going to be incredibly easy. The last three years at CanCon, everyone that's been there has been awesome people, very open to showing you how to get into this really awesome hobby. So, check it out.
One of our favorite things to do, well, my favorite, I don't know about Jeremy, but one of my favorite things to do is actually set someone down who's never played and get them actually involved and actually have them entertained so that something becomes a habit.
Jeremy just throws rocks at them.
Yeah,
I don't like people.
Well, I don't like people, but I like getting people to play role-playing games.
And there's no wrong way to play, right? I mean, you can't come to a con and mess things up unless you're just mean. You know, if you've never played the game before, tell people you've never played the game before, right?
Yeah.
Everyone, you know, people who have played will be more than happy to give you some advice on what to do, and you don't take that advice, you know, as long as you're having fun and not, you know, robbing anybody else of theirs, go for it.
Yep. And for the most part, everyone at CanCon are very nice people.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, except for me, I'm an ass.
Yeah.
Except for a douchey McDouche or something.
There was them.
It happens.
But that's all. That's all the emails we got. The usual things that I like to sort of get the rundown on is of course the CanCon stuff. You can actually go and submit an event now for CanCon and sign up for events. Although we're taking event submissions, I believe, all the way through June. So I mean, it's going to be a constantly updating thing. We got tons of really cool events up there already that I've seen, and new ones popping in there pretty regularly. So. Nothing huge to report on that. I mentioned it in the front part. I've got in the intro is I got the master mold of the Jabberglock minion, and it looked fantastic. So I'll pass that off to Secret Skeleton Games. They're going to get that manufactured and have it at exclusively at CanCon. So it's going to be the only way to get it. I'm looking forward to seeing people there. It kind of blows my mind that it's less than 3 months away now. Lots of stuff that needs to happen between now and then, I suppose.
Yeah.
In the meantime, rate and review us on iTunes, all the regular places. Hit our forums and pester us there, that sort of thing. Drop us an email. Any of that good stuff. And enjoy the show, I suppose, unless you guys have anything else to add.
Just to say, the guy who might be coming to CanCon for the first time, he can find me. I'll be running Mecca pretty much any time, but I'll always have a seat for him, and we'll be more than happy to show him the ropes.
Sweet, no problem. Hey, there you go, Rusty.
And I'm pretty much planning on running something once a day, which means if you find me, I'll let you sit in and listen.
And there are tons of ways to ease into it. You know, I mean, don't get put off by the big, very complicated board games. There's gonna be stuff there that's incredibly easy to pick up really quick and a lot of fun. I mean, the one I would really steer you towards, if you're a superhero fan, check out the Sentinels of the Multiverse. Those guys are going to be there, and that game's awesome. Really, really quick to pick up and a lot of fun, so definitely check it out. And I failed to mention it during the Kickstarter portion, but they started up a new Kickstarter for their next supplement, the next expansion, which is already funded. It's already at about 200%, I believe. And they're working on a new revised, expanded, or better edition of the core game because it's out of print already. So they're doing pretty
well. Out of print already.
Yep, they're out of them.
Did they sell all of
them? Uh huh. Oh yes, they have none left in their warehouse, except for a few scratch and dents, I think.
Because when we talked, remember they were like, "Well, it's kind of nerve wracking because we have these sitting on the shelf." And we're like, "Yeah, this game is awesome."
Oh yeah.
And now this is like 7 months later, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because we had him on the show back in October of last year, yeah.
October? Yeah, all gone? Yeah, that's pretty awesome. That should be
Rook City is out, and I've got it. It's awesome. The quality on it, they moved to a new printer, so their quality actually has gotten better. Just look at the box itself. The quality of the box is really good. I have a slight issue with the art they put on the cover. They need to work on some better graphic design and the logo is not big enough. It needs to be like in your face. That's just me. But that stuff is available. But the Sentinels thing, last I checked, it was over 40 grand. It's over 50 grand now. It's at 51,000. So tons of ridiculous stuff. But hey, check it out. It's a good stuff. We love them. But that's a good one to get into. Mecha is a great one to get into as well. I played it last year with it was you, me, Eric, and Tracy sat down and played a game, and we learned it in no time flat. So great stuff like that. There's going to be a ton of games that you can get into. Tons.
And a lot of them are designed specifically for ease of play in a 4-hour session.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's all I got. That's all she wrote. We're going to stick a fork in this. Please join us next time, and thank you, Chris, for being on the show.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Coming over.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States license, some rights reserved. This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.